Hello everyone, welcome back to Glee Chat. This is our 86th episode, which seems like a lot, and we're still carrying on with our flashbacks project. Haven't failed so far, haven't given up in hopelessness, so that's nice, I suppose. Caitlin and Jack have joined me this week, so hello guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, and we have made it through to the end of the first 13 of Glee, so the first original run of Glee, basically. We're doing our flashbacks this week for Ballad 110 and Sectionals 113. So in case you have missed what we're up to, we are rewatching sort of the most important episodes of Glee in chronological order, whether those are, important to us for a personal reason or important to the story for a really big plot. It's a very subjective thing, but we are trying to vote on, you know, majority wanting to do whichever episode. So it's been fun so far. Kind of really bit of an emotional roller coaster rewatching some of these episodes, but yeah, it's been good, I think. Did you have some feelings this week, guys?
Yeah, especially Sectionals. It's so good.
And yeah, so that's been really, really good so far, I think. I've been enjoying it, I guess. It's been kind of, as I said, a little bit upsetting and emotional and strange, but I've been enjoying it, and yeah, it's really, really fun. If you want to kind of contribute to anything that we're doing or suggest episodes for the future, you can get us on our Twitter, which is glee_chat. Or you can comment on the Hyperbole page for this podcast. We always have a fair bit of discussion there. But yeah, if you've been rewatching any Glee or you have any favourites from the second half of season one, please let us know, and we will go ahead and take that into consideration when planning the next flashback. So, yay. I don't know how Mitch does these editing notes, like, while actually recording. Like, I have no idea what his process is there, because it seems incredibly difficult.
I guess he's not actually hosting, though, so it's probably
easier for him. I suppose, but anyway. Yeah. So, the first episode that we ended up watching this week... Oh, Jack?
Yeah.
Sorry, that whatever that was just made a massive amount of noise.
Oh, okay. I just moved my laptop a tiny bit, sorry.
So much noise. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. The first episode that we did was Ballad, which is 110, and there's nothing that you missed on Glee this week. No, here's what you missed on Glee, because it's actually directly after Wheels, which is the last episode we watched, so these two were consecutive. We chose this one for a variety of reasons. I'm going to admit, when I nominated this one, I was mainly remembering the Finn and Quinn storyline, and I had completely forgotten or repressed the Rachel and Will and Susie Pepper storyline.
I've literally
forgotten it happened before it started going, so let's address that bit first, shall we? The assignment in this week's episode of Glee is ballads, basically, so they have to do a ballad for sectional. It's a rule now, apparently, so whatever. Schuster and Rachel demonstrate a ballad to the class, a love ballad, and she discovers that she has a crush on Mr. Schuster, and that, you know, that sort of escalates to a crazy obsession, and Shu is totally freaking out about it because he is so hot and studly that all of the girls fall in love with him, so it's a frequent occurrence that he has to deal with.
Naturally.
Yeah, I mean, but he remembers the particular problem of Susie Pepper, who was a past student, I guess, I think it happened a few years ago, and she's like a senior currently at the school, who was also crazy, crazy in love with him, gave him, you know, a novelty gift and stalked him, and basically when he told her that it wasn't going to be happening, she tried to commit suicide via eating the hottest pepper in the history of time and burning her esophagus out. So isn't that just lovely and normal, to quote Sue Sylvester? seriously, that plot, I had forgotten it. I had repressed it or something. And it's completely ridiculous. I feel like if you saw it now in Glee, you'd be like, this is really weird. At the time, I kind of just went with it. Like, I was like, okay, this is absurd. Like, but this show does absurdism. That's what it does. So
yeah.
The Susie Pepper plotline or the Rachel and Shu plotline, was there any kind of thoughts on that situation for either of you? Did you guys repressed it as deeply as I had?
I just kind of forget about it because it never comes up ever, ever, ever again. And, yeah, I didn't really – rewatching it, I didn't really – well, when I first watched it, I didn't really think that, yeah, she actually did try and commit suicide, like – I did not even think that when I first watched this scene. But it's actually pretty intense when you think about it that way. But you don't think of the intensity because of how awful it's random it is.
Yeah, it's because she's eating a chili pepper.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Caitlin?
I remember it happened, but for me, rewatching it, Terry was totally the highlight of this.
Yeah.
Like, making Rachel clean their apartment. And in the flashback when Susie calls and the line he wrote down is, listen, you little psycho, this is Will's wife, and if I don't get enough sleep, my antidepressants won't work, and then I'll go crazy, and then I'll kill you.
Oh, my God. It's so weird. It's so weird. It's really like, it was just so absurd and ridiculous. I kind of liked it. Like, there were so many, like, ridiculous tongue-in-cheek bits. Like, I don't know. Caitlin, what did you think of Will in terms of his kind of worry and freaking out? Like, do you think this is, like, tying into his arrogance and love of himself? Or was it, you know, did it actually seem legit? Because to me it seemed a little bit like, oh, yeah, he's legitimately freaked out, you know, by this. Is this something that troubles all teachers? Like, you're a teacher, are you not, Caitlin?
I am.
Does this happen to you?
Yeah, that's all I said.
I have not been teaching long enough for this to be a thing, so it has not yet come up. But
when you do, when it does, you'll know what to do.
Yeah, I will remember this, definitely. I mean, I thought, like, it does feed a bit into his disgusting narcissism in that he's like, I can't go through this again because this happens so often. But I did think, like, his reaction was kind of fair. Like, I didn't hate him. Like, I was constantly grossed out by him because he's Will Schuster. But his reaction to the situation, I was not bothered by. It seemed legit.
Yeah, I thought it was as well, and I just loved him being like, oh, it always starts with a novelty gift. I don't know why, I just found it, there were so many good one-liners in this episode, actually, like, so many, and I feel like that both him and Lea Michele must have had a lot of fun playing this episode, like, his, like, completely freaked out faces and her, like, total, like, no-holds-barred crazy kind of situation, and I just think that she especially looked like she was having a lot of fun with that.
I think so with the cast as well, like when they were trying to put them together, and then Finn said the thing about I can't remember what he said, but because Matt wasn't there, you know.
Yeah, that inner monologue from all of the different members of the cast during Endless Love is one of my favourite things on Glee. It's so good. Like, it's just so ridiculous. And they should have done, like, the inner monologue thing really works for this show, but they kind of dropped it, or they don't have it as a consistent thing, and now it kind of seems weird. But, like, when they were nailing it, they were nailing it with the inner monologues. And there's
reaction to Quinn, far out.
The bit about Kurt as well is something I'm going to get to in Kurt's plotline. But, yeah, that inner monologue was glorious. But, yeah, Will versus Rachel's affections was a very strange and interesting thing. I mean, I'm glad we've got that out of the way, I guess, in the history of the show, because, you know, it'd be annoying if it came up in, like, season 3 or something that she decided she was in love with Will.
She took the opposite in season 3 with Puck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Radio, yeah. The bit that I did really like in terms of the Susie Pepper and Rachel and Will plotline is when Susie keeps trying to accost Rachel, like, you know, in the hallways, and Rachel's like, you can't hurt our love. about, you know, Will and herself to Susie. But I really liked the bit when Susie ended up cornering her in the bathroom and was like, you know, here's why what you're doing is dumb and stupid and wrong, as opposed to like, I'm going to kill you for coming near my man. I thought that was a really cool moment, and I will never ever forget the we're both mildly attractive and extremely grating. Sarah Drew, who plays Susie Pepper, is great. Like, she's a great actress and is famous for a lot of other things. But yeah, I really liked that kind of end result of Susie accosting Rachel. That was my favorite part of the entire storyline, and I would have liked Susie Pepper should return for season 6. How about that?
Yeah. Well, I think, like, honestly, I think that, like, minor characters like this should come back at the end of the season and remember how crazy and great it once was. I think it'd go out on a real high note if they did. Like, I just want Kendra. That's what I'm getting to. I just want Kendra back.
Yeah, oh dear. if we're never even going to see Terry again, I don't know why we... Yeah, but, you know, it would be an interesting...
Well, we could see Terry again. I'd be surprised if we didn't end season 6 without seeing her again in some capacity.
Given the news that they're... just cast a bunch of, like, new children that they're going to focus on in season 6.
I have thoughts about that.
Let's talk about that at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it is a big piece of news, and it's really shocking to me. I was like, I kind of get where they're going to go. Pardon?
Okay, I don't find it that shocking.
We'll hold off on that for the
moment. Okay, yeah, all right.
We'll make some time for that at the end, because it is big news. But yeah, anything more about Susie Pepper, Rachel, Will, Terry, etc.?
Just Emma.
No, I think that's okay.
Oh my god, Emma, yeah, when he's trying to do the musical number, and he's just like, you're a very good performer, Will. And I'm like, Emma, don't be so duped by him, but it's so funny.
He's an idiot. I don't know why he thinks this is okay. It's like, but it's meant to be completely crazy, and we're meant to think he's stupid for trying to handle the situation this way. Yeah, he's just a dumbass. I don't, like, come on, Will.
I hate you, Will.
The Emma, when he, you know, she's all reasonable, and then he sings. Are we just meant to believe that, like, all girls just will fall down and die if he sings? Like, is that a thing? Like, props to all of the girls in Glee Club that didn't have a crush on Will Schuster in that case, because, but yeah, the Emma's reaction after the performance, where she's meant to be the rational, you know, third party, was phenomenal, though gross, that Will Schuster would inspire that in her at all. Just Rachel's delivery as well, being like, I'm very young and you can't be close to me. And it's just like, oh my god. I just think that My main praise is that I feel like Lea Michele got to go real, like, full-on crazy and probably had a really fun time acting that crazy, so that must have been good.
I was watching so much of that through my fingers, but that was, like, because that's how it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, you were very effective because I could hardly watch this.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, and another moment as well, just in tying into this story that I really... loved as well, was at the beginning, very beginning, before they sing Endless Love, was when Schuster realizes he's going to have to be paired up with Rachel, after he's sort of knocked back Finn from getting to choose Quinn, Finn being like, you know, when Schuster realizes he's stuck with Rachel, and Finn's just like, the fates talk, Mr. Shu.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, Finn sassed Schuster, like, several times in this episode in a way that really should have continued. I was just like, I love this. This is fantastic. And, yeah, I'm sad that it did not carry on, like, in terms of him challenging Mr. Shu for his stupid decisions, because things may have played out differently and for the
better. It comes up later, like, especially with the new kids. I remember moments in season 5 where Jake and Ryder would, you know... Well, Ryder would think it's awesome, and Jake would be like, are you kidding
me? This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Yeah, God, yeah. Ryder, you're a gift, an underused gift.
They messed him up in season 5.
Pardon?
They messed him up in season 5. He was great in season 4, but...
Yeah, all of those kids had a bit of a bumpy road, but yeah, Ryder, fantastic. That kid was such a good actor, and his character could have been really cool. Anyway, more important plot line than Susie Pepper and all of that disaster is the the basically Kurt's crush on Finn, which is also in a sort of vaguely inappropriate situation, and the beginning of their bond. And that story ends up tying into sort of Finn's parents and Quinn's parents both finding out about the baby. But talking about Kurt and Finn in particular, because they end up getting paired up together for the ballad project, and Finn's kind of, you know, he's like, I don't know if I can do this with a guy, and Kurt kind of takes this opportunity to kind of try and worm his way into Finn's affections. I mean, there's a lot of scenes that involve this, but any thoughts just about kind of what happened between them in this episode from either of you guys? Like, we can go through sort of scene by scene, but any sort of overarching feelings about Kurt's behavior or anything like that?
I forget how, like, predatory he is.
Yeah.
And I remember there's a moment later on where Finn says, I think it's season two, he says that if he did that to a girl, he'd get a restraining order done, you know? Like,
yeah.
Kurt's really not being okay, so I just forget how really inappropriate his behavior is.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
it's way out of line.
It is, and it's like he doesn't realize it. Like, it's like it seems innocent. You know what I mean? Like, it seems quote unquote innocent, but it is kind of really weird. I will throw back right to the beginning of the episode in those inner monologues where he says his bit where he's like, "I could totally sing this song with Finn, but screw him if he thinks he's taking the Diana Ross part from me." Has any quote ever summed up Kurt Hummel better than that in terms of the way his, like, affection, like, interact with, like, no matter how much he, like, loves a person, like, he loves himself more, even though he doesn't really seem to realize it. It's so fitting. Yeah. Like, apply that to his entire relationship with Blaine.
Oh, my God, it's so perfect.
And, like, seriously, it's, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, like, you know, having Pat sort of competitive aspect, but it's really that line is glorious, but yeah.
Oh, man, you just made me think of something else. Like, I forgot how enjoyable it is to see Kurt not in a relationship in a way where Blaine's not in here yet, because it's just, I forgot how enjoyable he was to watch. Yeah. Even though he's like being like crazy, well, not crazy, but his yeah. plots are a bit inappropriate, but it still is fun to see him function without having to have someone else there with him.
Yeah, Jesus. The thing is with Blaine, and I mean, we'll get to it, but the thing is with Blaine is that they try to then make Kurt, like, a dependent person, and Kurt isn't a dependent person, and it's like the character is, like, fighting back against what the writers are doing the whole time throughout that relationship. Anyway.
It doesn't gel.
We'll get there. But yeah, the song, basically the scene where they're starting off their ballad, and he kind of suggests, you know, sing to the baby, and Finn sings, you know, I'll stand by you, and all of that kind of thing. What he's saying is, like, quite sweet, but at this point, do you think he actually cares about Finn as a friend, or is he doing that sort of, oh, I'm pretending to care about your feelings because I have feelings for you and I think that this is, it'll make you dependent on me. Like, I think that there is a point in this episode where they do start to become friends, but that first scene with I'll Stand By You, I don't know if it's that moment. Did you guys feel anything genuine there?
I think it's completely manipulative. Like,
yeah?
I think,
like, 100%, or do you think there's a tiny bit of friendship?
I mean, I feel like his motivation here isn't just to be friends.
Yeah.
So there's, even if what he's saying is good advice, because I do think what he tells Finn is genuine, but I don't think the underlying motive behind that advice is genuine. Like, yeah. I think he's maybe trying to get Finn to be his friend, but he's not doing it for the reasons of just genuinely wanting to be friends.
Yeah, because it's really, you know, there's a difference between having feelings for someone and trying to help them to benefit, you know, because you care about them, and it's not necessarily to do with your feelings for them. I mean, it's because you care about them, but not, it's not so they'll emotionally owe you one, if you know what I mean, which I think is sort of where they end up getting Puck to by the end of the episode. There's a little bit in the last scene of the episode that I think is a really good comparison, like, because we'll get there, but yeah, but just Kurt, I don't think he's like doing this, oh, I love you, so I want to help you for your own good. And I mean, Rachel also has that trouble as well, so, you know, obviously Kurt and Rachel are very comparable in many ways, but I mean, we have his monologue, Kurt's monologue, where he outright admits, you know, he's like, all right, I'll admit it, I'm in love with Finn, blah, blah, blah. Kind of goes through, you know, why he likes him and all of that stuff. And I mean, not only is it kind of, okay, so he has a crush on him, but I think, Jack, you said, you know, I thought he was smarter than that in terms of, like, what he's doing is relatively deluded. So, yeah.
Like, I think what he should do is, like, I mean, I'm not saying this from, like, a personal point. I've never done this, but what he really
if
should
do
is...
If you were going to try and do
if
this.
If I was going to seduce a straight man to love me, what I would do, he should, like, what he should do is, like, actually... like befriend him. Like, if you don't go into it, you know, with your eyes wide and, you know, wearing your heart on your sleeve, like, just try and get him as a friend. Like, do things that Finn would do, not make him what you want him to be, sort of thing. And then if you wanted to continue that onto more motivations, then yeah, like, he needs to start off like smooth, but instead he's going in the deep end right away, if that makes sense.
What with his moisturizers and things.
Well, yeah, like, even in, like, the episode later on, like, he decorates the room thinking that Finn's going to like it, and I'm thinking, you're so crazy. Like, Finn, of course, is not going to like how you've decorated this room.
Yeah.
And Finn isn't going to want to sing a Diana Ross song.
He does seem to be projecting what he wants onto Finn rather than liking Finn for who he is. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the most problem with Kurt, like, with a lot of people he's with. He wants people to be who he wants them to be, not who they actually are.
Which he likes says the a lot idea about, of you know. People.
Yeah, he likes the idea of being in a relationship. He's like, oh, I want to be in love and I want a boyfriend and stuff. He's like the worst at having a boyfriend. Like, the worst. So,
Finn, he says when he flashes back, like, Finn was kind of his protector. So he loves this idea of having this protector, but he doesn't really... like Finn as Finn. He likes Finn as this idea of his protector, I think.
Yeah.
So I guess it goes back to why Bert and Kurt are so close, because he does want someone there to protect him, and when you've got a dad like Bert Hummel, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Kurt also seems to support Finn in the whole idea of telling Quinn's parents. And I just wondered if you guys thought if any of that was like a genuine... like, if he really thought that he was helping Finn, or if he thought, this is going to screw you guys. I mean, I know that he obviously goes up to Finn and he keeps being like, oh, how do you explain how mean she is? It's because she's a girl. Kind of makes you want to swear off all girls. I'm like, that's creepy and offensive. Really bad. Really, really bad. But he's not very subtle. But in general, the idea of Finn ending up telling Quinn's parents through song... do you think that Kurt is aiming for that to fuck up, basically?
Well, this is the part of his plot where I honestly didn't understand the motivations. Like, what I would think where it's coming from would be that he thinks that it has to be said eventually, and maybe Finn's given him signs to think that they're up to that point where they finally should tell the parents because it needs to be done. Like, obviously, Quinn's... not, you know, Quinn, they're going to start seeing Quinn's baby bump, and her mum, it says in this episode that her mum already kind of knows. So maybe Kurt thinks that it should happen soon, so therefore he should help them out. However, he also wants his own way. I don't know. It's very, very wishy-washy. Like,
I mean, whether his help is genuine or not, like, whether it has the aim of, you know, like, we'll see in the next, you know, the next episode we watched, Sectionals, Rachel flat out says, you know, to Quinn, I told him because I wanted him to hate you, basically. And, you know, I don't know if Kurt is working off the same mindset here of, you know, of trying to screw up, you know, trying to screw them up even more so that Finn is then dependent on him, basically. But, I mean, I feel like he might change his tune a little in terms of the basement scene where he goes over to help Finn, you know, get dressed, I think that even if he is still trying to manipulate him at that point in terms of helping him, I think that that is probably the first proper moment that he actually saw Finn as a person and they realized that they could be friends, if you know what I mean. And it is a little bit sad because it is tinged by Kurt still trying to manipulate and he does still carry that on. But, you know, if you could go back in time, that would be the moment where you would say, hey, follow that thread. Don't do what you're about to do for the next year. Just don't do that and just do that instead. And that will be a nice thing for everyone. That, you know, whole, you know, that's not stupid, dead parent kind of talk, which I'd forgotten occurred in this episode. I mean, I knew it occurred at a time. I'd kind of forgotten it occurred in this episode. So did you guys sort of have anything about that particular Furt moment?
It's the only moment where I feel like they're both being pretty genuine. Even though Kurt's still got those motivations, he's sort of calmer, yeah, which is nice.
And he brings up something, you know, he wouldn't tell anybody else.
Yeah.
About smelling his mother's perfume. So I feel like there is something genuine there because he's telling Finn something he probably wouldn't want anyone else to know.
Yeah. I think that it was really...
That's nice, you know, at least he can feel... Sorry, at least he has someone he can feel safe around, you know. At least he feels safe around Finn and that he can open up to him this way. That's nice. I like that part of it.
Yeah, and it's like... That's kind of what I meant about sort of going back in time. Like, he's like... It's like, Kurt, this relationship could be really, really good. Like, probably not in the way that you want it to, but it could be really, really good. You're about to go and do a bunch of destructive shit for the next... year or whatever, but if you'd paused here and just followed this direction, you guys would have been best friends, you know, even sooner in that way. And I really do love, like, the Kurt and Finn eventual relationship, and obviously we had to go through a lot of drama to get there, and that makes it even stronger. Yeah, that moment, I mean, looking back, I remember at the time it was like a great big emotional moment. Looking back, you know, we know that there's a lot more to come, and so it's not quite as affecting as it was before. But I really just felt that moment was sort of the turning point, even though Kurt was still sort of stuck in his manipulative behavior. So I don't know.
What's interesting about this plotline as well is that, I mean, there's many things that Glee has shown that no other TV show would. But especially this one, like, I don't know any other show at the time that would actually show what is a lot of, like, it's always stereotyped that gay people are going to try and hit on straight guys and convert them just because they want to, you know? And, yeah. Like, that's a lot of thing that a lot of gay people have to suffer with, being stereotyped that way in their life. But, and it's so interesting that the show is actually going to go along with that stereotype and portray it in a way that you don't actually hate Kurt for what he's... you don't outwardly hate Kurt for what he's doing, you know? It's just really interesting the way they're presenting this sort of plot on this show, you know?
Yeah. It's actually interesting to me watching it again. I do place... They build up loyalty for Kurt so well, like, in all of his other moments, that you do end up forgiving a lot of this behavior, at least if you watch it without really thinking about it. And so that when there are the big moments where, you know, Finn snaps and is really terrible, you're like, oh my God, Kurt is a hurt angel. Finn is the devil, if you know what I mean. And that's how I probably would have felt the first time watching it. Watching it again and knowing that Kurt is not, you know, a very nice person, even though they do great jobs with him, you know, great job showing what his personality is like. I definitely do feel much more uncomfortable about his behavior watching it again, which is interesting. It's not how I felt when I first watched it. Watching it again now, I feel much more uncomfortable.
I think something that works with this, though, is that they do this storyline in parallel with Rachel's inappropriate...
With Blaine?
...storyline. Well, no, in this episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you have, like... If you're concerned about, you know, them showing the gay side, like the gay predatory stereotype, it's being paralleled with, you know, a heterosexual version. So it's kind of, they've normalized it in a way that you don't really think about it in those terms, because you have the straight girl going after the guy in a really inappropriate way as well. So I think that parallel works really well.
Yeah, I do.
That's a very
well.
Good point. I never thought of that.
I think that they were right to do it in the same episode. Like, they were right not to point a spotlight on Kurt in a kind of gay predator way, because I don't think it's as predatory as, you know, as the word implies. I think it is sort of, it's very naive while also being predatory. Like, it's very, he seems incredibly naive about what he's doing. I mean, he knows when he's being, you know, what he's trying to achieve, but he seems very naive about his sort of motivations and everything, as opposed to people outright being, you know, consciously experienced manipulators at, I don't know, it's very, you know, what Finn ends up saying, you know, further down the line, it is right, but it is pretty common for, I guess, it's more representative of, I guess, what girls or women do occasionally, you know, with trying to get in with guys, which was what we see with Rachel. I think it's just a very teenage thing, basically. It doesn't have a real predatory aspect in terms of, I don't know, I don't want to say, oh, it's not creepy. It is creepy. But there is some sort of innocence about it that makes it mildly forgivable. I don't know how to describe it properly, but it doesn't seem, you know, the same as, say, I don't know, someone on Queer as Folk being a predatory gay and trying to, you know, hook straight guys as a hobby or something like that, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but yeah, it's not a great path to go down, but it does seem vaguely innocent. The other thing I noticed with this, you know, in terms of their friendship, like Finn and Kurt, is how quickly Finn does latch on to Kurt. Like, and that makes me feel sorry for him as well, because, well, sort of sorry for both of them. Sorry for Kurt that he didn't just go with that and be able to appreciate the friendship. And sorry for Finn, because he really just wants people to trust and to like, you know, to actually be friends with. And he doesn't have very many of them. And, you know, both, while Rachel is incredibly supportive of him, both Kurt and Rachel are doing it without Finn's best interest genuinely in mind, which is kind of horrible. But right at the end, Finn, when they're, you know, he's like, you helped me so much, man, you know, and he tries to be so cool. He's trying so hard to be cool about Kurt singing that song to him. He's just like, oh, okay, like, you know, he's like, all right, sounds awesome, I don't know it, I'm sure it'll be good, sounds positive, etc. And it was so clear that he was uncomfortable, and it was so clear that he was trying so hard, like, to be decent, you know, even compared to the beginning of the episode, he's like, I can't sing an emotional song with a guy, and I really loved that in a way that I don't ever remember really noticing before. I don't know. It made me feel really sorry for him, because he does try so hard, and obviously fails many times, but he does try so hard. But that plot line was very much tied into the situation of both Finn's mother and Quinn's parents finding out outside about the pregnancy, because we have Kurt advising Finn to sing I'll Stand By You, which he then goes and sings to a sonogram video in his room, which his mother catches him doing. Now, I remember seeing a review saying, this show absolutely, like, I don't know how they do it, but they managed to make a teenage boy singing to a sonogram not cheesy. Like, they managed to pull it off and actually make it a great moment and not cheesy. Do you guys agree with that, or did you think it was ridiculous?
Oh, it was silly, but that's Finn. No. Like, I'm not surprised he was doing it.
It was genuine, but it was kind of silly.
Yeah.
And this was such a great pull for the tribute as well. They could have done many songs, and I wish they had done a few songs, but a few more songs that he had performed. But really, this was just a nice pull to recognize his character.
Yeah.
Especially when, because Mercedes does acknowledge it, she laughs a bit at it, you know. that Finn once told her that he sung to the sonogram and that, so, yeah.
Yeah. It was so well done. Like, it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous situation to see a teenage boy, like, singing to a sonogram in his room, but they managed to pull it off. Like, it really did, I don't know, it really did work. And then, obviously, Carol kind of discovering that situation is amazing. That's probably my favorite moment in the episode is her kind of just quietly being like, so is this what's going on? And him crying and like falling on her. I really love that. It gives me very Scott and Melissa McCall vibes if we want to throw out to my Teen Wolf people. But in general, yeah, Carol is such a great character, and her seeing her reaction compared to obviously Quinn's parents' reaction is one of my favorite parts of the show.
Speaking of gifts, Carol is a gift.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
She's such a great actor as well.
Yeah, she's incredibly talented. Like, she's really great character actress from many things, and I'd like to see her in season 6 as well. I think, sorry, Kendra, but I would really prefer to see Carol if we get the chance.
Well, I think Carol will be there, but
I doubt they'll ignore the memory of Finn in season 6. If you know
God, they never would, no.
So she's just such a great character, you know, right from the start. Like, she's got to be one of my favorites, I think. So, yeah, Carol. But yeah, at that moment it was one of my favorites for sure. But we then obviously have. I'm just going to flat out say, by the way, Kurt's worst bit to me, at least in the episode, was when he goes up to Finn and after Quinn's yelling at him, you know, it's like, oh, I'll take care of this. And he's just like, how do you explain her, you know, irrational treatment of you? It's because she's a girl. I'm just like, okay, all right.
That's what I mean. Like, why would he say that? I thought I remembered Kurt being a lot smarter than this, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that, because he is quite level-headed and a little sadistic, but I just thought he was smarter. So I think that's what I'm trying to say. I was just a little surprised at the lengths he was going to and the naivety that he has towards his motivations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, me too, honestly. I'm pretty surprised watching it in retrospect, but, you know.
Yeah.
And then obviously in the episodes that we skip, we see that developing even more with Rachel in Herography and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, he ends up going over to Quinn's parents for dinner, Finn does, and singing to them about Quinn being pregnant. So, yeah, I mean, Caitlin, I would like your impression of, just off the top of your head, of, yeah, the intro scene with Quinn's parents about the chastity ball, and then your impression of them at the dinner, because they are worse than I remembered.
Oh, they are awful. Like, the writers really were trying to make them as stereotypical as possible. Like, with the whole, I gotta go watch Glenn Beck! Like, wow, you were trying so hard to make them as uber-conservative as you can make them, and it was a little over the top, but oh man, it was painful, and I just thought that explains so much about the way Quinn turned out.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. And like, the writers just like, they did such a good job of just being able to demonstrate and portray the whole family dynamic just with the interactions between the actors.
Yeah.
Like for example, moment, when he hits her ass when she walks away, and it's just,
and when, know, she's just like, I'm your wife. I don't want you to lift a finger for me. It's just like, oh my God, like, it's when he offered to fill her up the drink, she was like, no, I am the servant. Yeah. I was just like, oh my God. Oh
yeah.
Yeah. They're so bad. So bad. But yeah, so basically when Finn goes to the Fabrays, it made me feel like physically, like, so anxious and so sorry for him. And he's so, my thing with Finn, at least in these first 13 episodes especially, and, you know, it'll carry on, but right into season 2, is that he is just so troubled. He's just, and it's done so well, and I didn't realize how well it was being done until I watch it in retrospect, but he did so well at just showing that anger that teenagers have that they just don't know what to do with. Like it seems overdramatic to watch it, or maybe I was too young when I first started watching it, and I was like, oh yeah, that's totally stupid. Nah, we're not. But like, you know, it's. I mean, I'm not that. I'm 28 now, but I was what, like 22 or something when I started watching the show, and it's just so true. Like the way that he just vibrates with this, not angst, not like oh I'm emo, but just this emotion that he doesn't know what to do with, and he just does it so well, like throughout the whole first season, that it's just been really affecting me. And I don't know, is that something that, like, is that just me, or is that something that you guys have noticed at all?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's any different to how once I first saw it.
Oh, it feels incredibly different to me. I don't know why.
Corey just does such a good job at, like, being the character of, because it pretty much is him, like, being a boy in a grown man's body sort of thing. Like even just how he stands, you know, he stands kind of tallish and awkwardly, but that works really well.
Yeah. I don't know, this just, I just keep feeling so sorry for him. Like, just I can kind of imagine all of the stuff going around in his head, like Finn's head, and even every time he kicks a stupid chair, it's ridiculous, but, like, I just, looking back, I kind of understand the anger a lot more, and the kind of just, you know, teenage, I keep wanting to say angst, and angst makes it sound ridiculous and, you know, not valid, but, like, the kind of, the stuff that's going on inside people without them really knowing what to do with it, and yeah, God, being a teenager must have sucked for a lot of people. I had very different issues, but yeah, God, it must have sucked. I don't know, like, it just keeps getting to me. But yeah, when he sort of tells the family, like, the bit where he basically goes to the bathroom and he's like, he's already, you know, Kurt is already someone he's depending on, you know, just because Kurt has been compassionate to him, or pretended to be compassionate to him. And him, like, throwing shapes in the mirror and stuff, like, trying to get his, I'm just like, oh, God.
I forgot about that. That was so funny.
It seems so ridiculous, but I feel so sad for him as well. Like, just teens. Teens don't know what to do with themselves. It makes me sad.
He tries so hard.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He is always trying so hard and never gets it right.
Yeah.
But, like, again, I want to bring up a point as well. Like, yeah. I mean, we spoke about this before, but, like, I don't, like, I can't even put words in my mouth. Like, Finn is not, I believe that Finn is naive and silly enough to sing the song in you know, saying that Quinn's pregnant. But I don't think Kurt, I keep coming back to it, like, does Kurt really think this is a good idea?
No, this, like, is the thing. Do you think Kurt was expecting this to screw up?
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I don't know his intentions.
Or was he just going along with Finn's ideas, if you know what I mean? Yes, Finn, I will help you do anything you want to do. Like,
well, this wasn't Finn's idea. This was Kurt's idea.
Well, I suppose the singing, but yeah, like,
because Finn was kind of like, no, I don't want to do it, But and Kurt was like, no, you've got the tape. We've rehearsed. You can do it, you know? Kind of like, all right, well, calm down, Kurt. It's a bit of a stupid idea as it is.
I feel like Kurt's motivations are also some, to me, kind of related to how much he could have possibly known Quinn's parents would react to finding out. Like, would he really have had a concept of how poorly they would have reacted to that?
I want to say I would hope not.
Yeah.
But Kurt is relatively awful. So,
Yeah, I mean, kids have, like, in the show have done very similar situations where I don't know how to say what I'm feeling, so I'm going to sing about it, you know? Like, okay, that's all right.
Yeah.
And I think that this plan that they had would have worked a lot better if they, like, if Finn and everyone had finished dinner and then they're all just sitting around chatting and then he stands up and says, you know, there's something going on that I need to tell you about, and then he sings. But instead he just, like, runs out of dinner when her dad's doing a speech, comes back with a thing, and then starts singing, you know. But I think that's why it probably stands out as a bit more silly to us, because it was so out of place.
Yeah,
but it was meant to be though. It worked well.
Yeah, all of the musical numbers in this episode except for the last one were very awkward on purpose, I think, like every musical performance. Yeah. I was interested in Quinn's reaction as well, because at first she's like, Finn, please don't do this. But as soon as he's sort of singing to her and it's very kind and loving, like, she actually looks quite touched, which I kind of didn't remember happening. Like, she's kind of like, you know, she's not like furious at him and storming out. She actually looks quite touched. And then when they're all having the talk afterwards, you know, she's appealing to her parents, but she's not angry at Finn. I mean, and also sort of ended up tying into, in my opinion, asking a few of the same questions between the scene where Mercedes finds out that Puck is the father. You know, she says to Finn, she says to Puck, you might be the baby daddy, but Quinn chose Finn, and, you know, you need to let her make that choice. And then here, Finn also kind of basically taking Quinn's choice away in as far as telling. Like, so what did you kind of think of Finn deciding to tell them? And, you know, do you think you would have felt differently if Quinn had reacted differently or what?
I think it would have felt differently if we knew that it was a decision that Quinn and Finn had made together.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like Finn does not have a right to... I mean, okay, that shouldn't sound like that, because in this situation, Finn really does have every right to act accordingly because he thinks that it is his baby. Like, I'm not saying that's not right. But it's like, it's not like Finn's telling his own parents, you know. He's telling Quinn's parents, and Quinn doesn't know about it. It seems kind of unfair as well. I think it would have worked better if Quinn and Finn had made the decision together.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, what just sort of stood out to me was her kind of actually looking sort of almost happy and loving or touched by what he was doing, even though she didn't want him to do it originally. That kind of really reminded me of what Mercedes said to Puck in terms of, like, Quinn chose Finn and you need to respect that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the first moment, like, do you think that there is sort of more to Quinn choosing Finn than just, I'm too ashamed to admit I cheated on my boyfriend, if you know what I mean? Do you think she really thinks that Finn is more capable and stuff like that at this point, even though Puck has been trying to make it very known that he is a good guy?
I don't know. I think that just, like, Mercedes loves drama more. Like, she loves drama and all that, and she's a diva. But I think that she respects her friends more than anything, so she's almost sort of just staying out of it. Like, she's just respecting Quinn's decision. It's not any of her business.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Fuck,
I love Mercedes. I didn't like Mercedes much at all, like, in the first three seasons. I don't know what it is about season five, man, but I just love Mercedes now.
But yeah, in terms of Quinn, do you think that she, you know, just chose Finn out of shame, or do you think that she thinks that she loves him at this point?
I think she wants to love him.
Yes, that's right.
And she's trying to make herself love him. She logically sees him as a better choice as the father, so she wants to have that affection for him that she deep down knows she can't feel, but she's trying to force it.
Yeah, well, that's sad, isn't it? And obviously he does manage to help her a lot. Like, he brings her home, and Carol is very, you know, she also must be rather traumatized, but, you know, Carol knows how to act like a good person. So, just the fact that, you know, Quinn doesn't react, you know, doesn't get angry at Finn and goes with him as opposed, I mean, not that she has a lot of other places to go, but, you know, she still is like, I'm going home with Finn and all of that, and turns to him even when Finn took that choice away from her. Yeah, I think she is trying very hard to make that work with him, which is quite sad.
I think also that it kind of reacts to, or is parallel with, in sectionals, when Rachel tells everybody that Quinn tells Rachel, you know, I'm not mad because you just did what I wasn't brave enough to do. Like, I think there's a measure of her being relieved that the secret is out.
Yeah.
So it's hard for her to be angry about that.
Yeah, because she knows that, like, she should have done it. Yeah, I agree with that too.
Well, I guess it's such drama. The last moment is basically, as we kind of mentioned, that Finn trying really hard to be cool with, even when Kurt almost knows at the end of the episode that he's like, I'm being inappropriate, because the way he kind of says, I honestly love you, in terms of the song, he's like, he kind of looks like he knows that it's a bad idea when he says it, if you know what I mean. Though he does still go ahead to make some bad choices. But fortunately, we don't have to see Kurt sing I Honestly Love You to Finn. Thank God. Because they basically call everyone away to sing the group song to Finn and Quinn now that they're in this terrible situation as a support, and the song is Lean On Me. So in terms of musical numbers, I'd probably say that this is, it would make a guess that this was everyone's lead choice for the episode, unless anyone has particular fondness for Don't Stand Close So Close To Me / Young Girl. No,
not so much.
But yeah, Lean On Me was, you know, great group number, like led by Artie, which, oh my God, every time he sings, now that I'm watching it again, I'm just like, God, what a waste. What a waste they didn't give him so many more leads, because God, he's good. It's not necessarily like traditional theatre good, but like neither is Finn, if you know what I mean. And he's so good. But
God, Artie and Mercedes just destroy, like, they're so good together. You know?
Yeah.
Like they and I like how, like, subtly throughout the next few seasons they do have a few duets together, and it's really nice. But I just want to bring up a point, like, at the beginning of this scene, I think it's absolutely hilarious when Mercedes and Finn's little
I didn't tell you to close your eyes. Don't close your eyes.
Yeah, and then it's the cake. No, there's no cake.
Yeah, that was really natural and really, like, really well done. And I noticed that as well. And
just,
I was
moments like that are just so good, and they just build up this family of so well.
It's a little bits that feel almost unscripted. It's like where there's dialogue, which must have been scripted at some point, but then it's not like the sole focus, if you know what I mean. Dialogue that isn't the sole focus of the scene always seems really natural to me, and I really like that. But Lean On Me, I really liked, I always really liked this number. But what I was saying earlier in the episode about the difference between caring about someone and therefore kind of, or loving, having a crush on someone and loving someone and wanting to, you know, use their troubles as a way to make your affections sort of more important to them, versus caring about someone and loving someone and wanting to help them because you care about them. I thought that was kind of really, it's so stupid, but the little difference between the way Kurt was like, call me to Finn, and he, you know, in the little, and the way that Puck, who's kind of taken what Mercedes said and accepting, you know, he basically took what Mercedes said and accepted it, and kind of just like gives Quinn a little nod, like I am here for you if you want, if you know what I mean. I just found that both, I mean, Kurt, hilarious, but I think it's a really good and, like, small but good example of the difference in approach when you care about someone who doesn't want to be with you, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but that Quinn, that little moment of Puck to Quinn literally every time makes me cry. Like, I didn't cry throughout the episode because it's a stupid episode. I mean, it's a great episode, we chose it, but it's a ridiculous episode for many reasons, but that little Puck nod just makes me cry every time. So yeah.
And like with Puck, speaking of Puck, like him and Mercedes, they don't have much together, but their dynamic is so good.
Yeah, I
love it.
Yeah, probably put that. We'll do our favorite like pull quotes or moments. We've covered a lot of the episode, but if we do a favorite quote or moment, I'm gonna say my favorite moment was probably that scene between Puck and Mercedes. It's the Finn and Carol scene. And then the scene between Puck and Mercedes is my favourite moment. Their dynamic is so good. It's so good. Yeah. They should have been, like, BFFs forever. Like, it would have been incredible. And I mean, I love the bit where they have that dating episode, even though it doesn't, like, last very long. I really think they're such a good dynamic with each other.
Mm. I think one of the reasons why it's so good, like, the characters are awesome together, yeah, but also it's one of the first moments that we see, like, directly in, more intimate, like a close conversation and interaction between
the two different groups in the school. Like, you have Mercedes, like, the sort of outcast nerdy, and then Puck is a popular jock guy. Like, I know that the Glee Club's obviously full of the different groups and stuff. Yeah. But the reason why we see them as a family is because all the subtlety that we've mentioned before, yeah, as well. Yeah, the relationship. But this is the, yeah, this is the first time we see an actual conversation happen. And it wasn't anyone fighting. It was just a conversation. And Mercedes being good and Puck understanding and, you know.
Yeah.
It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, so good. Anyone else got a favourite moment that's not Puck and Mercedes?
A favourite part. I mean, it's just something that I think that they should have utilised more is the camera shots that they when they just have the face on the camera and
the
that
close
the camera
up
on the face. That's it.
And hilarious
then
faces.
It's funny. It's so funny. They don't do it as much anymore, you know.
Yeah, the tone of the way they film the show and the voiceovers and stuff is very, very different. But yeah, that kind of absurdism was fantastic.
Yeah, and like another thing as well is, when Tina read out the card, did it say other Asian? I've always wondered that, or did it say Mike and she said other Asian?
I don't know, because his face was fantastic. He was like, I'm assuming Schuster didn't put other Asian in the.
That's what I mean.
In the hat.
But Tina's face was kind of like, really? Like, she was looking at the card kind of going, really? So I can see him having written that and her going, did you really write that?
Ew.
I don't know.
How gross, Will.
And it's funny as well, Rachel, when she's like, looks like my weekly letter to the Ohio Show Choir Committee finally paid off. And Puck's reaction.
Yeah, the way that she kind of just defers to whoever's like, yes, you'll understand me, right? It's like, Puck's just like, yeah. Off like
so good. And did you see the like there's so many stuff in this episode I just completely forgot about and missed. Like when they're singing Endless Love, Rachel and Shu, and then there's like the phones in the background, like the candles.
Yeah.
And they're
like,
all just having
like,
a joke with it.
Yeah.
It's so
oh yeah, this episode did have a lot of really, really funny moments that I loved, like a lot of one liners as well. Caitlin, did you have any particular that we haven't mentioned yet, either jokes or anything nice?
Brittany's it's a male duck.
Oh, I think the duck is in the hat.
Yeah. This is one of the first episodes where we've really started to see Brittany, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
She said something last week, but like the last episode, but yeah.
And in this episode during Lean on Me as well, Brittany is really nice and innocent at this point. Like, you know, she becomes very strange. But like, even I think it's even in Lean on Me, she's kind of like hugging Rachel in the middle of it. Like, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, like, yeah, it's Brittany just wants to love everyone at this point, which is nice, I suppose. And it just always made me weirded out that you'd see so much stuff in the group numbers, like them choosing to like cuddle each other and stuff, that, you know, then you'd have a turnaround and see an episode where they're fighting. It's like, you literally like each other all of the time. You're all there together. There's none of this, like, this I hate you stuff isn't real. So when fights would come up, it would really weird me out because of the background, you see the background dynamic of the cast, you see the background dynamic of the group and them sort of interacting in, you know, in scenes and in musical numbers and kind of, they clearly are all like close with, but it's like as soon as you ask them to think about the fact they're close, they have fights and stuff and it's like stupid. But anyway, teens are dumb. High school sucks. But yeah, I think the only other moment I really loved was, again, or one-liner was when Kurt's kind of trying to console Finn about his father and, you know, he's all like, my father was so brave, you know, and I can't even go over there. And when Kurt's like, your father didn't run into the desert empty-handed, he has a weapon. And Finn's like, you think I should bring a gun? And I was just like, I don't even, yeah. Nah, I don't know. I loved that. But yeah.
I have to go. They'll think I'm pooping.
Right? Like, the writing for Finn, I will say, it was beautiful. Like, it was so well done. So yeah, I just. Who did this episode? Was it Ian? Because there was one of the particular writers wrote. One of the particular of the main three, like Ian. Brad and Ryan Murphy writes Finn really well. This one was Brad, and Brad is actually really good.
Brad.
Kurt usually, but I think it's Ian that usually does really, really good Finn stuff. But yeah, Brad. I think in general, if you added up all of my favorite episodes, the majority would be Brad Falchuk episodes. So yeah, I just whoever. Yeah, the dialogue in this was fantastic. So yeah. I'll be interested to see in the sixth season if they just keep it back to those original, if they're only doing 12 episodes, if they keep it back to those original three writers, and or if they're still going to like pass out episodes to a group of writers, because it was a lot tighter when it was just those three working on the episodes, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Any other moments from this before Jack takes over for sectionals?
I think I've covered everything I want to, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so I'm taking over for the next part for sectionals, a recap on sectionals. But between Ballad and sectionals, we actually had two episodes, Herography and Mattress. So I'll just give a quick, here's what you missed on Glee for them. So really the main plot in Herography is that, like, Will thinks that Sue is still trying to sabotage their success in sectionals. So she goes to one of the competing schools, which is Jane Addams Academy, just to see if the set list has been leaked and whatnot. And then that kind of like nothing really happens with that. It just introduces us to the two other competing teams, because the deaf choir isn't happy that they're getting, that the bad girl school is getting treatment, yada yada. And we get a great performance of Imagine, which was actually, I mean, I thought it was a nice moment, but it also could have been used for a bigger moment in the show, because it's, you know, I think it's like the second biggest song of all time on Rolling Stone's website, the magazine. Then the other plot that we had as well is, you know, Kurt's still being creepy to Finn and tries to give Rachel a makeover, knowing that Finn isn't going to like what he does to her, because Rachel still wants to be with Finn, so that's cool. Quinn also reconsiders having her baby adopted. And then we have a great, great, great scene of Quinn and Park babysitting the Kendra's kids.
Oh my god!
Kendra was on fire this episode again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the episode pretty much ends with Sue actually giving the set list to the competing teams and telling them that they should cheat to win at sectionals. And we had a few really nice numbers in this episode. I want to bring up Papa Don't Preach. This is, I feel like Quinn, like, I mean, I said before, I didn't like her performance of You Keep Me Hanging On. It's one of my least favorite ever of Glee. But this, I feel like they really found what to do with Quinn's voice in Papa Don't Preach, which was really nice. It was just a really, 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 like, just beautiful, gentle number. Imagine was awesome, and I really, really liked how Tina didn't really do anything at all in this episode, like she doesn't do it in most episodes. But but they still gave her a solo at the end of True Colors, and it was just beautiful. Like, this was a nice episode. Did you guys have any thoughts on it?
I had forgotten that babysitting scene was this episode. I mean, I knew it must be somewhere in the first 13, but I'd forgotten it even existed until you mentioned it. Oh yeah. My god, I loved that so much. And when they were tied up to the chair, and they're just so cute together, and I just love them so much. I love them so much, and I just anyway. Yeah, sorry. I love that, except for the whole sexting Santana thing, because that was like, it's like Puck doesn't quite know like how to rein himself in, but also Santana's lesbian, so yeah.
Oh, but not at this point. She doesn't know. Like,
well, whatever, she should. Sorry. Sorry, that's not very sympathetic of me. but yeah, I don't know. It's the idea of like Puck and Santana is weird to me now. So it's just like, yeah.
I know, it's such an old, like, digging it up from the Glee, you know, graves or something. It's just, yeah. What about you, Caitlin? Any strong feelings for this episode?
I remembered almost nothing about it until you mentioned it.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember Rachel freaking out Finn by coming out from the bathroom all done up like grease and doing You're the One That I Want again, and him having a great terrified face, but yeah.
Oh, she is batshit crazy, isn't she?
Yeah.
I love her still, though. All right, so next episode is Mattress. This is actually, if you were to ask me what my favourite episodes of Glee are, the first I know is Hold On to 16, but I think that this one would have to be up there, Mattress.
Really?
Top five. I can't even tell you so much what it is. It's just, like, I think it might have been one of the first ones I'd actually seen, and I know that for a lot of people that sort of is always close to their heart. But the main plot in this episode is, Sue convinces Figgins to not put the Glee Club in the yearbook because it always gets defaced. Which is, and then like they brought up a lot of points in that, at that part, where it actually was kind of legit. Like they're actually doing the kids well, but also saving money and resources. I don't know. It made me think. So everyone except Rachel, sort of like doesn't really want to do it for that reason. They don't want to see all their faces get defaced on the yearbook and stuff. But Quinn really wants to get back into the Cheerios yearbook, so she doesn't have to. So her kids can look back at her high school years and be proud of her, and then she may have the line, not the bastard one that she's carrying now, which was nice. Nice. And this is the episode where Will actually finds out about Terry faking the pregnancy. It's a pretty big episode, really, and it really sets up the sectionals episode pretty well. We had the musical numbers in this one was Smile, which was Rachel and Finn, which was really nice. And I know you like Lily Allen, Natalie. I like Lily Allen, but I'm not like Lily Allen, you know. But this was a nice number, and
I found it kind of weird that they used this song. I mean, like, was that song big back then? I can't remember when that song came out in like 2006. It was like a pop song that wasn't like currently major, but not like totally far back either. So it kind of seemed like a weird choice to me. But they just needed some songs about smiling, apparently.
Yeah, and then they had Jump by Van Halen, I think. Yeah, which was I freaking love that scene, and just. If you haven't watched the mattress ad in a while, go back and watch it, because just watch. I think honestly you should watch it 12 times and focus one time on each character, because they just have beautiful moments. Kurt is hilarious and Finn's awesome, and it was amazing. And then we had the last number, Smile, which was actually I think one of our. I mean, they have a lot of music on in the first 13, as in music that isn't sung by the cast in the background, and this was the first one where. They're singing the song, but we don't actually see them singing.
Yeah, so it's their recording, but they're not performing it on the screen. Yeah.
It's just a great episode. I can't even say exactly why I love it so much. I think it's just because, again, it would just get that feeling of familyship and you know, like, they're all come together at the end to pose for the yearbook, and, yeah, I just liked it. All right, well, if do you guys don't have any feelings for that one?
The Will and Terry scene... was pretty awful. I mean, it's nice that it's really, 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 like, I don't know, freaky and weird, and it's just I kind of want to watch that again, like that scene, because it's really, I don't know, I can't tell who's worse in that scene, if you know what I mean. Like, it's weird because, like, he finds the pregnancy belly and Terry's just like, oh, it's a fake pregnancy pad. Like, she flat out, like, kind of doesn't cover it up. And her approach to life is so weird to me. But then Will is almost really, like, violent. And I don't know, and I mean, yes, I understand your extreme anger in that circumstance. But that whole scene just makes me, it obviously had to come out and, it, you know, it was going to be a big dramatic thing, but that scene just makes me uncomfortable. I don't know. Caitlin?
Yeah.
I mean, Will in general makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah,
well, this part is the catalyst for which I remember thinking this was actually really, really smart, and rewatching back on it, I don't really think that as much. But I thought it was really a really neat way where, you know, Will finds out that Terry was faking it, so Will goes to the school where the mattresses are that the kids got paid in, so then he sleeps on the mattress because, you know, he doesn't want to sleep at home on one of them, and then the reason why Will gets disqualified from coaching them at sectionals is because you can't return a used mattress, and because apparently the kids competing in the commercial goes against the
show, because they're getting commercially paid for their work.
Yeah, which, I mean, I want to go and read this rule book, because it seems like they can just say any rule and say, yep, it's in the book, so, okay. Yeah, so then, all right, moving on to sectionals.
Yeah.
So really, I'll pop up the doc. So really, like, the main plot, obviously, is we finally get to the point where the kids are competing in sectionals, but, and as big as that is, Finn finds out that Quinn was faking the pregnancy. But I just want to start off with the smaller plots first. So we really start off the episode with Mercedes upset that she's not going to get the solo part at sectionals. You know, she's not going to sing the ballad. So what she does is she performs and I'm telling you, I'm not going, which is a really, like, we see Mercedes shine as well, but, like, it just makes you remember how how amazing it is that Amber Riley, you know, is able to perform this way. And I wanted to say as well, like, it's funny, like, how Rachel, I didn't expect her to give up the part that easily. Like, I think it's just because she was so blown away by Mercedes' performance that she did it. But what do you think, Natalie? Like, did you expect Rachel to be so willing to just give up her big moment at sectionals like this?
I had actually forgotten that she does this. I had forgotten that she, until I saw her watching Mercedes sing. Like, until you saw the reactions in her face, which seem really actually, they don't look like hateful. She looks impressed and genuine, and it kind of looks like a bit of, like, not breaking character, honestly. Like she looks like, whoa, like, this is so good. Like, I'm genuine, and I'm not, like, putting on a front. And then I kind of remembered, oh, yeah, she's going to get up and tell her that she should do it. I really liked it. I didn't really understand what Rachel's motivation was for it. Like, was it just that she was trying to look like a nicer person to everyone so Finn would love her, or was it totally legit? Because it was a really big, like, moment for her. I didn't really understand the motivation behind it, though.
Yeah, I don't think there was any motivation. I think this was the first moment where she was, like, genuinely impressed and really, really willingly giving up her spot. What did you think, Kaylin?
Yeah, I kind of agree that it took me off guard because I had forgotten that it happened too. And, you know, as soon as you see her do that, you think she's going to plot something to get it back, or she's going to demand a diva off or something to get the role. But no, she just gives it to her. And that surprised me. But I was also, you know, good for you, Rachel. Like,
yeah,
proud of you. And but it's weird.
it's even more interesting, like, when everyone's telling Rachel, come on, you improvise, you do the solo, you know, when they're having to rechange their set list because the team's, you know, performing their songs.
Yeah.
She could have easily just been like, yep, fine, I'm taking this moment off, I can do this better than you, I'm going to sing Don't Rain on My Parade, whether you like it or not. But instead, she's just like, no, we agree, Mercedes, you can still do the solo. Have you got any other ballads in your repertoire, you know? It's just nice, you know, and we always have this Mercedes Rachel drama, like, who's the bigger diva, who can sing better. We always have this, but for some reason, it doesn't get as tiring for me. I don't even know what it is. I think it might just be rewatching and thinking about it again after my newfound love for Mercedes. I'm a bit biased, but yeah.
As I said, it's just what I mentioned in the last episode. It's like, behind their backs, everyone really likes each other, and as soon as you like bring it up to them, it's like, no, we hate each other and we're competing. But like, they're really good to each other most of the time, if you know what I mean. And then it's only when someone, like, look how nice they were to each other when Schuster wasn't involved to mess it up. Let's blame Will. They can sort out their own squabbles, you know. Schuster's there handing out parts, you know. If they're deciding between themselves what they're doing, it's all fine. If Schuster's there saying, Rachel, you're the best, none for Mercedes, then, you know, it's a person in power making a child feel bad. And, yeah, it's just get rid of Will. Just get rid of Will. It's fine.
That's actually very true. I didn't think of it that way, but that, yeah. Like, just saying, it's so different when the kids are competing against each other because they want the spot. But it's very different when Will is making them compete for the spot.
Yeah,
I didn't think about it that way. That's interesting.
Get rid of him. Done with him.
Why the new Directions functioned so well is because Will was gone.
Finn didn't have that attitude.
Love that.
Solve the entire problem. Like, there we go. Get rid of Will. None for Will. But yeah, I actually cried during And I Am Telling You because it was so good, and I'd forgot. And she's also so just passionate. Watching Rachel's face, and I'd forgotten that happened, and then I remembered, and I was just like, oh my God, I've got feelings. So yeah.
And a part of this as well is like, I miss all the background interactions. Like when Mercedes is trying to get the spot before she starts singing, she turns around and Matt's like moving his arms around, going, come on, go for it, go, keep trying. And it's just, like, all that says so much, you know.
Yeah, there was so much built up about these characters in the fandom just by the background interactions from the first 13 episodes. So much.
Yeah. All right, so the next big drama in this one is, well, Rachel has a sixth sense, apparently, and thinks that something is up with the baby drama. But she ultimately finds out about it. Well, she doesn't.
She doesn't really find out about it. She kind of for herself. Yeah.
Yeah. She starts suspecting, and then she gets manipulative and says, "You know, Tay-Sachs, you need to get tested." Oh wait, it's only if the father's Jewish. Oh yeah. No, maybe you should go do it. You know, and then she's in the background when Quinn and Puck are fighting about it, and she's like, "All right, now I know something's up." But I think it's just, I think honestly, it's like, it's kind of not funny, but it's just interesting how. Apparently, we see in the calls the calling scene where all the kids are
referring to the party line.
Yeah, we see the party line. Yeah, we find out that everyone sort of knows about it because Mercedes kind of gave it away, which I wasn't too fussed about that. I mean, it's not like they wouldn't have told anyone else, so it's all right. But I think it's funny that they keep it hush-hush, but then when Rachel finds out, she automatically goes to Finn and, you know, tells Finn right away. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Natalie?
I mean, how much of Rachel's actions do you think are... They're all keeping it hush-hush because they don't want to make drama for... Like, they don't want everything to go to shit before sectionals, basically. And none of them really have... You know, I don't know whether they're... Mercedes, you know, gave them the same lecture they gave Puck, you know, like saying, you know, let's not rock this boat because Quinn has clearly chosen...
Oh, my God, I hope so. I heard that that's what happened.
Or if it's just a gossip thing, if you know what I mean. I mean, they're high schoolers, so it may just be a gossip thing. But if Mercedes was like, look, here's the deal, except... Do we see her telling them in the other episodes? I can't remember.
We don't, but I want that to be a
like,
thing.
She's like, here's what I told Puck. You know, we're not going to say anything because, etc. But it may have just been gossip as well. And, you know, it might not have been anyone being, you know, it might not have been a matter of not caring about Finn. It might be a matter of, you know, respecting Quinn, but it also may just be, you know, children gossiping.
I imagine it was more gossip because if it was more out of respect, she didn't need to tell them at all.
Yeah, you'd
think. Well, I think even if they didn't want shit to go down before sectionals, I still don't think they would have told Quinn. Like, then none of them, I don't think any of them feel like they have a right to do it. So I don't know. I think Rachel's only reason for doing it is, you know, maybe she knows shit will go down so she can have Finn. I think that's on all.
I mean, she kind of says that. There are a few thoughts I had about it because she, you know, Finn's like, I just feel like winning will make everything better. I don't want to be unhappy anymore. You know, does she not know that telling him will make things go badly, you know, for the club? Or is it that she, is her motivation naive enough to be, you know, if we're taking it that, oh, she knows stuff will go down and, like she says to Quinn, I wanted you guys to break up so I could have him, you know, does that mean she cares more about her, you know, getting Finn than she does about winning sectionals? Because the other idea I had about it was that she told him so that he didn't have to be stressed about it anymore, if you know what I mean, that she was naive enough to think that it was like, oh, if I tell, you know, it's not your baby, so this isn't your problem anymore. You don't have to be stressed. You don't have to be unhappy, if you know what I mean. Like, do you think that
can come
into it at all?
I don't think she's that naive.
Had to be a factor, though. It had to be a factor with making
sure she's safe. She sort of told him directly in response to him being like, I want to feel better and I want to feel happy. It's like, is telling this going to make him feel better? Because the other option is that she cared about breaking Quinn and Finn up more than... Either she flat out cared about his well-being and thought she needed to know. Thought that he needed to know no matter, you know, what the consequences. Or that she thought it would help him, or that she wanted him more than she wanted to win sectionals. So I don't know which one of those is the most likely.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time believing anyone would be naive enough to think that it would just make Finn go, oh, then I'm completely unstressed. Yeah. No.
These kids are pretty dumb. These kids are pretty dumb, Caitlin.
They're dumb in their motivations.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a hard time buying that they're that dumb.
Yeah. So a few things go down in this part. We start off, I think this must have is the part where it came back from what would have been like a commercial break or something, but we start off the next section of Finn just the camera under him and him like punching the camera like from Puck's point of view sort of thing, and that was pretty stressful.
Yeah, he just takes it as well. They get back up, you know, he's like goes at him a couple of times, but he just fucking takes it. He just
He knows he's done the wrong. He's like, yeah, I deserve this.
Yeah.
Which and just a part of this scene, I mean it sort of brings up an overall general thing, but what do you guys think of Diana Agron's acting in these first 13? Because for me, it always comes across a bit like, okay, like, you're trying to cry, but if you're not going to cry properly, don't cry at all sort of thing. And she sort of has, like, she talks so slow and has this weird, like wrestle in her voice. Like, I don't know, it's not even important, but what do you guys think?
Did
you notice it?
I mean, I kind of know what you mean. I mean, I think that Quinn is still trying to put on a front. I think that, you know, later on she becomes a lot more matter-of-fact and kind of snappy, which I like. But as I said, I think that, you know, harking back to that baking scene that we did in Wheels, I think that was the first time you actually saw her talking like a normal person as opposed to kind of being all, like, really structuring her image when she talks, if that makes sense. So I don't know if it's a purposeful choice or not. I mean, I do think Diana Agron was the right person for Quinn. I do really like what she does with it most of the time, but I don't know about the crying. Some people just cry like that. I don't think I really thought about it.
Well, for me, it's just like when she's trying to be emotional and she's like, who told you, Finn? It's like, okay, settle down. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she's not a yeller. Maybe Quinn isn't a yeller.
Yeah. All right, so the big climax of all this is, well, not the big climax, but Finn leaves the club because he's so pissed off and he says that he's done with everyone. Shu brings him back, and this is probably one of the most historic scenes ever of Glee. Like, everyone, no one's ever going to forget the scene where Finn comes through the doors with the sheet music and brings and rallies everyone together, and then he makes them put on a great performance. Natalie, I know you're a big fan of this scene. Caitlin, I'll get your thoughts first on this one, and then we'll go to you, Natalie. What did you think about Finn coming back and saving everyone? Like, do you always think about it, or?
I had forgotten about it.
Oh my god!
I watched this episode once, like, 5 years ago, so I haven't seen it since. So I genuinely have very basic recollections of some high points of the first season. So, like, specific scenes, I really remember very few of them. So I could tell that it was moving toward that, but I didn't specifically remember what had happened in that scene. But, you know, I love seeing Finn be a leader. Like, he has that in him, and it's great when we get to see it come out and him be really genuine about something that he loves and that he is good at, that rounding people up and getting them motivated.
Yeah, look at how much better they did without Shu.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Finn isn't perfect, and he knows that, and he knows that he can't sing as great as other people, and he can't dance very well, but he knows how to bring the best out of other people, and I love seeing moments where he does that, and this was the first time we really did see it to this extent. Natalie, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I remember the first time when this episode aired, like when this episode was airing live, if you know what I mean, and it was happening basically, as I've said before, I sort of started getting into the show, you know, halfway through the first 13's live airings, and there was like a little break, and then, you know, these ones came back, and then it was known that this was going to be the finale until, like, you know, the six months or whatever, when they put out the second half of the season. And so this episode was, like, so anticipated. I was at work. I downloaded it at work, and just literally in the middle of the day, didn't even care. Like, I was working on the front desk or something where the rest of the office was really tucked away. And I was, like, sitting at work watching it. It was either a live stream, or it might have been a live stream or a download. And I just, from the moment Finn walked in the door to the end of the episode, I was just like a crazy person crying at my desk in public in work. And I just remember it so strongly. Like, it just from the moment he walks through the door right to the end of the episode, I did not stop crying. And that was basically my memory of that, which, so it did mean a hell of a lot to me. And as I said, the early Glee really brought a lot of crazy stuff out of me. I don't know if I was having some sort of strange emotional upheaval at that point or something, but I would just, it was pretty huge. And there's a lot of small moments in this episode that I also remember really loving and really loved again watching it. For example, when they're talking about the set list, you know, getting leaked and, you know, them accusing Santana and her being like, you know,
I would love to say about that.
Being like, it's the best part of my day. And, you know, her being, Rachel saying she believes her, and so many moments in this episode that, you know, specific moments that I would go through, you know, when we talk about the various moments. But, yeah, that the Finn thing is a really, the entire sectionals, the whole episode really, but the, from the moment Finn walked in the door to the moment the episode finished, the first time I saw it, when it was first airing live, nonstop crying. So, and I'm not,
like
a big crier. Sorry, Jack. I just always go on about, like, I've been going on, like, so much in this flashback about, oh, I cried so much here, I cried so much there. I'm not, like, a crier. Like, not really. Not that much. And at the, but apparently when I was watching Glee for the first time, I was a massive crier, and it's bringing a lot of that back. So I don't think anything had made me cry like this. When I, the first time I watched it, I don't think anything had made me cry like that before, in terms of television at least. So,
yeah. I think this is the point of the episode as well. Like it's just the build-up. And then, like, this should almost be, like the climax of the episode, but it's not. And then it just keeps going up, you know, it just keeps improving. What you said about Santana is, I never, ever, ever forget this moment of where, you know, everyone's accusing Santana, and she's standing there defending herself, and then she's like, it's the best part of my day, why would I want to mess it up? And then Rachel, like, they kind of just look at each other, and Rachel goes, I believe you. And then, like, the conversation doesn't continue there. They kind of have, like, a two-second pause of looking at each other and kind of smiling, and then Rachel continues. And for me, that just says, like, it just says so much. Like, because at this point, Santana's not really a character yet. Like, she honestly doesn't really do much.
Yeah, we found out she's having sex with Brittany. Who knew?
But they're like, but also, like, with Brittany's not really a character either. But where we, as an audience at this point, we kind of know Brittany's kind of dumb. Like, she was filming a thing, and she's like, Sue did not tell me to do this, and yada yada. But so that's why they're kind of having a go at Santana in that. But she's like, no, it wasn't me. And I feel like that if I ever get annoyed at the prospect of Santana, how she is later on, I always look at this moment with Rachel and Santana and think, okay, it's all right. Because sometimes in like season 4 and 5 and Santana's in New York, I'm always like, this should be Quinn, you know, like, as a show, Quinn, character of Quinn should be here being best friends with Rachel, you know, if you look back in now at season 1, that's how it should have gone. But like, saying this doesn't really make me as upset, like, the little reaction.
I think Quinn needed her own life. Like, I think that no matter what, like, I think that things that happen in high school, you know, for some people it really sets the path of their whole life, and for some people it's like a good or bad experience while it happens. And I think that no matter how much the time meant to Quinn, she needed her own life. And, you know, eventually that ends up being with Puck, which is yay for me. But I think that she was never going to be someone that, like, you know, no matter how, you know, close she felt to those people then or how much they helped her, she was always going to want to escape it. Whereas Santana, I think it actually probably did more for Santana, or that she needed the closeness, she needed the love. Quinn didn't need their love to carry on with her life, if you know what I mean. Like, she, like, appreciated the support while she had it, but she was looking for something different. Also, Santana, much more than Quinn, is obviously stayed on the show because she's someone who the character would make sense to become a performer in some way, though, oh my god, I do love her, as the idea of her doing PR and stuff, so good. That they ended up having a little bit with Rachel towards season 5, but she's a character that I'd more likely believe would be aiming towards a performance goal, which would make her, you know, a more important part of the show. So I do understand why her character stayed around, but in terms of, you know, Quinn sticking around and being best friends with Rachel versus Santana, I actually think Santana is the person that needed the people and the love more, whereas Quinn needed the support while she had it, but what she needed in the long run was to get the hell out.
No, I say I do agree with that. I agree with everything you said, without a doubt. Yeah. But in terms of with, I feel like Quinn, she went through the first 3 seasons, most of it, always needing a guy. Like, she always needed a guy there and sometimes would disregard her friends every now and then, which is why I love Vinmatra so much when she says, no, you're giving the Glee Club a picture, and I'd rather be a part of a group that's proud to have me rather than one who just wants me for the face of acceptance sort of thing, or face of whatever. And that's why I love that. But I feel like Quinn, like, her friends, she needs her friends, you know. And even though I do agree she had to get the hell out of Ohio because she was so hell-bent on getting out there, and that's her biggest thing. She hated it there or wanted another life. But I feel like that she could have been in New York or at least around more with Rachel. And I know there's, like, drama with Diane Agron and yada yada. But in terms of what you said about the performance aspect, I do agree Santana is more prone to the performance spotlight than Quinn. And that's why it makes me disappointed that we couldn't have a character who didn't always have to be so focused on the entertainment performance business. Like, Quinn could have been in New York, like, being an indie journalist or something, I don't know, for the music. Like, Quinn strikes me as the type of person who would kind of want to just do her own subtle, like, online blogging, like, magazine, so she can have her own opinion but get paid for it sort of thing, whereas Santana has her own opinion but she's a massive bitch about it. But I feel like Quinn could really formulate her ideas into, a nice discussion or, like, article sort of thing. So that's why I would have been nice to see Quinn, like, for a hipster, like, in New York, do her own thing. But, yeah, I'm kind of just ranting now.
No, I agree with you. I do. It would have been all of these characters could have had a place in the show. But if you're going to talk about people who hang on to the groups that they made, in high school versus people that kind of have it as a good memory and move on from it, I definitely see Quinn being more realistic to move on from it and Santana clinging to it because she needs that kind of love and needs people accept her, and it's hard for her to be close to people. So once she is, I see her not really letting go of them, whereas no matter how much she professes to hate them, she still shows up on Kurt and Rachel's door because they know her and they accept her no matter what, if you know what I mean, whereas Quinn wants to go and cope on her own. But I don't know. Anyway. Yeah,
not that I've never been sold on Santana, because she used to be my favorite character, like, ever. But every now and then I'm just like,
It is a shame. It is a shame. But I understand. And there's all sorts of, as my friend Alyssa calls it, inside baseball, which is like the writers, the decisions that happen besides the, behind the scenes that lead to choices, whether a character is around or not. So, apart from all the inside baseball into why Diana might not, have continued with the show, if they couldn't follow every character, you'd want something from every character, but it does make sense to me for her character personality that she might not have stuck around with the group forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that Santana moment did move me profoundly as well, though, Jack. So, yeah.
All right, so the next part of the episode this is where we first see the biggest performance yet of the show. And I know we had Somebody to Love, but this is their first competition performance, and it was really, really great. And even though they did numbers that we didn't see already than practice, it worked well because it was part of the plot. Like, what I'm saying is, like, obviously we get later on, like, their season two.
Yeah.
Season two finale, they write the song the night before, and then perform it the next day. Like, that's just complete bullshit.
Yeah.
Sorry about language. And then, whereas this one, they were forced to do other songs because they had their set list stolen from the competing team to perform for them. So it looked like that they're lying. Songs,
by the way, like, the way that they looked in the crowd reacting to the performances. Like, oh my god, so good. Like, Mercedes and Rachel. And then Artie, when they do Proud Mary, he looks so mad. And, I mean, totally valid, because it's not like any of them were in a wheelchair and it was like a representation thing. He was just like, I cannot believe they've taken this from me. Like, his face was so mad and it was so good. But,
and Mike smacks Jacob Ben Israel because he's dancing.
Yeah. And then Rachel pulling them out. It's like, not even caring about, like, yelling in the middle of the other people's song. It's like, anyway, but
and
it was nice
that they acknowledged that they couldn't do songs they were going to do, sort of thing. I really liked it. But holy shit, man, when Rachel opens the curtain up and starts singing Don't Rain on My Parade, it was just, you can't help but not cry at that part, because it was just such a build up of the episode. And then you just, like, I remember, I'm still rewatching it for the 20th time. I'm still so proud of them being able to come back from this and them all trusting that Rachel can smash out a ballad and then they can all improvise with this classic Rolling Stones hit, you know. It was just fantastic. Caitlin, what do you think about this this performance? I really like that whole sectionals competition and how they came back and how they handled the situation. What do you think?
I didn't cry, but I was grinning like an idiot the entire time, just kind of like, fist pumping, like, yes! So great seeing them come together as a team, and just, I love how kind of awkward the choreography is because it's unpracticed, and it feels so much more genuine of a performance than maybe we get later on in the series, and I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they work so well together, and I don't want to keep bringing up how Shu shouldn't be there, but they do so well together, and it makes me so upset that they just can't do this more often.
Yeah.
And it really highlights, in my opinion, the dynamic that they all had compared to what I think, like, I mean, I guess later on in season 3 and then comparing to the kids and the new kids in 4 and 5, I mean they all have a good relationship with each other, but I feel like this dynamic with this current with the originals is so different, it's so unique, and they're able to actually, I don't know what I'm saying, like they like the kids can work well together and create something great, you know, without having to have someone there drive it home. I know Finn was there, but Finn sort of was just a catalyst to getting them all back on their feet, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, part of it is, you know, something new, and, like, they don't have any, you know, they haven't even gone to a competition. They don't have anything to be working up to, or, you know, like, anything to be measuring up to from the past and anything like that, whereas any new groups, you know, have all of that on them as well. But it is very special. Like, it is a very, very important time for them and moment for the show, and it's just, it's so... So good.
And it's also because, like, the whole first 13 episodes was leading up to this moment, you know, and it delivered. Like, it smashed it out of the park, you know.
Yeah. If the show had ended here, like, if this had been a flop and it had never picked up, but the show had ended here, this would have gone down in history like one of those Firefly-style, like, you know, first-run legendary cult. I mean, it's still, Glee still will, but it's got a lot of baggage with it, with the ups and downs since then, if you know what I mean. But people would be going to conventions in like 15 years and, you know, being like, oh god, remember Glee, if you know what I mean, from just that 13, like, in ways I'm glad there was more, obviously, because there's a lot of things, but if this first 13 that they made in a bubble had never been picked up later on, this particular run would go down. In the same way stuff like Freaks and Geeks did, or even popular, like Ryan Murphy's other show, this would have been, like, a cult hit, basically.
Yeah. You know, I agree, definitely. Because these first 13 are just so good.
And it kind of ends in a place where you can be like, okay, yeah, and then, you know, there's no real resolution, I guess, with the baby and with Rachel and Finn, but if they'd, you know, it could have worked. Even the first whole season, the first, you know, if it had ended after one single season with the baby being born and Rachel and Finn getting together, that probably would have been quite a satisfying end as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, definitely. All right, so next point I want to bring up is just a small thing. What did you think of, like, I mean, of the judge, the first time you saw the judges' room, like, this is the first time we see how the judges, I guess, are going to be handled in this sort of show quite a lot. I know a lot of people have problems with, they shouldn't be allowed to judge a show choir competition because yada yada, but it definitely gave the feel of this show choir thing is actually not as significant as sometimes it can be portrayed as, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they had someone who was there because they had to fill in for their boss.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
This universe or whatever, I don't know. And, yeah.
I think...
What do you reckon?
I think that it worked really well. I think that with something we've talked about on the show before, I can't remember who, but someone brought it up. At, like, little regional competitions, it does... Like, they go totally ridiculous with it. Like, they have, like, clowns and, like, weird stuff, like, at some point. Like, that weird vampire man. But I think at this point, like, having, like... three, you know, vaguely local celebrities, like, you know, local news anchor, like Miss Ohio, and like a, you know, person who's filling in for like the head of a company. I think that it is totally the kind of judges that you'd end up at like some regional competition that no one cares about, except the audience was very enthusiastic. Like, is that just all of the parents, or like, is there, you know, anyway, I really, really liked that. And I'm obsessed with the woman who was filling in for the boss, who was like, I don't really understand what a glee club is. And I'd never even heard of the term show choir until about 3 hours ago. I was like, this is so good. It is a bit boring that carried on, and you'd like to see it nationals, at least for the judges to be people who would be like known in the show choir world, or, you know, musical theatre, that kind of thing. And they do that, you know, semi-okay. But at regionals and at sectionals level, I really like it. I think at regionals level, you'd want to get a bit more discerning, and nationals needs to be people who are legit, basically.
I mean, I've always thought that whatever they've done with the judges has always worked really well. Even like Lindsay Lohan and that, like, even though it's kind of like, whatever, like, yeah. I still think it worked well. Yeah. What do you think, Caitlin?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the judges. I just love that one woman's, like, tag was like state paid cynic or something. Like, yeah. That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so get me the hell out of here.
Yeah. It was really funny. I think it definitely worked for a sectionals level. I would have liked at least the nationals or the, you know, regionals to be people who knew what the hell they were talking about but sectionals, I love the ridiculous judges.
The drama is like, feels like life and death until you go into the judges room and they're like, we do not care about this.
I know, all. That's why it's so great. It works so well.
It's like, this is really little, you know, inclusive thing that literally no one except these kids care about. Yeah. It's great.
It just makes me laugh, you know, like, we get so up in arms about so much of this show, then it's like, but this doesn't actually matter. Yeah. All right, so as we know, the Glee Club wins sectionals, yay.
Yay.
We bring you that. Woo! We don't actually
see them win, do we?
I know. No, we don't.
They
we
don't
just
have
see...
the on-stage. You guys have won. They have the... Yeah.
Yeah, no, we just see... which is the next part. We see the kids in the choir room, like, sort of hiding behind the trophy, and then Schuster's there. And at this point, Schuster must have not known that they had won either. I mean, I didn't really...
Really?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't really...
I suppose he caught up with Emma, but they had a bit of a different kind of conversation at the wedding, did they not? Like, so, okay, can we just talk about that wedding for 1 second? Sorry, but...
Yeah, I was going to bring that up after, but yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. It's so weird... Did she just cancel the wedding and just show, like, did she only have one guest, or did she cancel for everyone else but expected Will to be there? Or did everyone show up and then go home and then Will was late? Like, what was
I think that's what happened. Everyone was there, they went home, and then Will came. I think that's what happened.
Yeah. God. Emma sucks at weddings.
Yes. Sucks at life right now, doesn't she?
Though she was really fantastic at sectionals when she was berating the head of the other choirs. I was like, Emma is my queen at this moment.
And even when Will approaches her, she's, you know, he's just like, oh, I just left my wife. And she's like, yeah, you just left your wife. Bugger off.
Yeah.
Like, she's really strong character, and I wish that she didn't love Will Schuster because
she can do so much better.
Yeah. Like, she's such a strong character. Except when it comes to Will. And even when it comes to Will, she's really good at handling him sometimes. But, like, I don't know. I just wish that it was not, you know, poor Emma. Sorry about your
life.
She
looked so pretty in her dress and her gloves.
She was gorgeous. Yeah.
I really love her.
We've seen her in a wedding dress. We see her in a wedding dress so much.
Yeah. Sorry, Emma. Sorry that you have to end up marrying Will Schuster.
And having his
time. I don't know about. I mean, I was never really on board for the whole Ken Tanaka thing, anyway. Because
no, of course.
I mean, I feel so sorry for him because he got kicked around to the curb.
But,
like,
I mean, she said that, you know, was she expecting to go to the? She basically lies to Will earlier in the episode. You know, she said, "Oh yeah, he took it great." Like, in terms of telling her that he was, you know. She was doing the sectionals, because he storms off and is like, no. So you'd think at that point there was a problem. Like, was she deluded? Did she think the wedding was still going on? Or did she know it was cancelled? Did she know he wasn't going to show up and she still showed up in her dress and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
I feel, Yeah,
he's never said that he left her at the altar or anything.
No. He just, no, it wasn't. And there was no food, and there was nothing. I feel like that she just went there to meet Will in her wedding dress, because that's weird. I don't know. But yeah.
I assumed she went assuming that the wedding was on, and then found out, like, he never showed up or something.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Poor Emma. Anyway.
All right, Emma. Yeah, so we end the episode with the big Wemma kiss. I don't know, do you guys have any strong feelings about that?
And I think we're the being vaguely happy at the time. Now I'm sorry for her.
Yeah, it was nice. I was like, yay.
She just deserves so much better. She deserves John Stamos.
I know! Also, I was a bit like, after she'd just given such a good, like, you know, you just left your wife, like, thing. You know, and how she resigns and all of that. Like, you know, it's sort of backing down on her convictions that she, you know, that he kissed her. Like, it's like, he's basically like, I don't care what you're saying about this. I'm still going to kiss you, even though you don't think it's appropriate. So that's,
but their love is so powerful, they just can't help themselves.
All right.
Well, Will Schuster doesn't care about what other people think. He just cares about what he wants.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, God, I love it. All right, so the last big moment of this episode was My Life Would Suck Without You, and this was another historic, great, iconic Glee performance because I don't like Kelly Clarkson, but I love this performance.
I didn't know the Kelly Clarkson song before I saw this episode.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, I have other feelings for Kelly Clarkson, but anyway, this song was great, and they dance. I can't even phrase it. Like they perform little snippets of choreography.
It's like a montage of all of their songs throughout the season. Yeah.
Yeah, and like every time they do a new part, I was weeping, and it was just fantastic. It was awesome. Leave me alone. These first 13. Oh man.
It was adorable.
This meant a lot to me at the time when it came out, this number. I thought it was really a big deal, and it was just Will doesn't deserve that, but you know.
Their lives would actually probably be better without him.
Yeah, and it's like, and when he goes running off, I'm like, has he gone running off in the middle of this number? Because it's kind of montage,
yeah, I know.
But it's not.
He's not even looking at them half the time.
He's just thinking about Emma, and it's like, God. Yeah, anyway, so boo for that. But yeah, I love the number. Will doesn't deserve those kids.
The kids are fantastic.
I remember a point, on an episode recently that we've done on the comments, there was somebody requesting for us to do a whole episode about Will Schuster.
I'm so sorry if anyone's listening to this and they really like him. We're not.
That's what I was going to say.
We're
not trying to
rag on you, but we are trying to rag on your life choices. No, I'm joking. I'm not. Look, in retrospect, we really don't like him, so I don't think any episode that's going to be about him is going to be very positive.
Yeah. I mean, they brought up some great points about the character and why we could do it in a positive manner.
Oh,
but
yeah, we could try.
I think we'd get through it without, you know, because just listen to these episodes, we can't do it.
Like, no matter how many good things he does, there's just stuff that I just hate. And
it's
just too much bad to
outweigh it.
No, it's really bad, but yes, I'm sorry. Pretty much any other character I could do one on. And there's some characters I dislike pretty greatly. Like, I was not a massive fan of Mercedes, especially in season 2. And I was...
Didn't do anything in season 2.
She was gross about Blaine. I never got over it. She was gross about, like, gay rights, basically. Being like, can't we talk about something where they're all interested in? And it's just like... Oh,
see, okay. I didn't look at it that way, but that's a discussion for when we are.
Anyway, I'm sure that episode will come up at some point. But yeah, I don't know. I never got over it. But there's many characters I could do a good or bad, or, you know, just focusing on the good. Will, I don't think I could get through it. I really don't. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. All right, so now that we've done with the first 13, just want to get general thoughts overall.
Can we just do like any particular moments or quotes from this episode and then do general thoughts?
Okay. Yeah. I was
going to reintro that. Cool. Yeah. Something at the time. Yeah. 54. Okay.
All right. So, any favorite quotes or moments from this episode? I mean, a lot of mine come from, I mean, funny as in, like, funny comedic moments. Sue has never been better than she is in this first 13, where she goes, love you like a sister, and she does the thing.
Wrote that one down as well, because, and I was just like, oh my god, she must have had so much fun doing that. Like, she's like, you're really going to push a woman? Like, all of those, if Matthew Morrison is a cool guy, I don't really know that much about him, I don't love what I know about him, but, like, if he's a cool dude, those suit scenes filming between Jane Lynch and him must have been so funny to film. Yeah. It's so much fun, because, yeah, her being like, here's another, you know, another thing that you can add that to things that you failed at, you know, like, yeah. And it's just so, so good. I don't know, I just... Yeah, I definitely wrote down the love you like a sister bit, because...
Yeah, and I love in that scene when, like, when she's walking down the hall, so funny, and Schuster calls out to her, and she sort of smiles, and she turns around, and it's almost like a wind-up doll, like you pull the string, and then she says something, but it works so well, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was here to feed my Venus flytrap.
Yeah, duh. I mean, yeah. One of my very, very favourite moments that, again, has stuck with me for a long time is when Quinn is asking Puck to take her to get the Tay-Sachs test, and he's like, does this have to happen tonight? Because I have my fight club. And I just never mentioned again until we meet Blaine, who's a member of the Dalton Academy Fight Club. And because of this, I have an unbreakable, completely unbreakable headcanon that Blaine and Puck have known each other longer than anyone else in the, like, show, like, longer than Blaine's known anyone else, but when they see each other,
they can't talk about it.
First rule of Fight Club. Fight Club. Like, that his Fight Club has met the Dalton Fight Club, you know, that they've had, like, bouts, like, yeah, and that they're, like, super close behind the scenes and stuff like that, and I'm sure there's fanfics about it, like, whether it's, like, shipping them or not, but, like, I'm sure there's fanfics where they're, like, secret Fight Club best friends. But yeah, they see each other, they know they can't say anything, first rule of Fight Club. And I just, nothing will ever change my mind about it, and it's so important to me because they're my two favourite characters, like, two favourite male characters on the show, and it's very important to me, I'm sorry, but yeah, so.
See, I was thinking the same thing when they said it, I was like, oh, it'd be funny if they were, you know, they did sort of compete in the Fight Club sort of thing, but I did not even think about, oh, no, they can't talk about it, that's why it's never come up.
Yeah, it's
that's
never hilarious. Come up, and it makes perfect sense. And I need it to be true. I just need it to be true.
Headcanon accepted.
Yeah, nothing will ever change my mind about that. It's my number one headcanon about Glee, aside from that fact that, well, that we know that Brittany was sexually abused and that I think Blaine was sexually abused. Yeah, so obsessed with that. So, yeah, that bit was very important to me. I also really liked Rachel being like, I'm going to hug you now, to Mercedes when she gives her the part.
I love when she always says that before hugging someone, so especially Mercedes. I love it.
Because she, like, doesn't so know how people feel about her, if you know what I mean. And it's like, I don't know. A couple of other things. I don't know. I really liked the Quinn sitting in that box and crying. Like, first Rachel coming to talk to her and then Puck. And her kind of, you know, telling Puck that she doesn't want to be with him. I mean, I don't like it, but I thought it was good. Like, him asking to be with her made me sad. And I love the scene where they're getting onto the bus and they're all just miserable, like Artie on the bus lift, and everyone's just like, ugh, and like complete misery. I don't know why. That makes me laugh for some reason, probably because I'm sadistic or something like that. Caitlin?
Besides Rachel's psychic line, because that is hilarious.
It's not my Carrie or anything.
My favorite line was Figgins when they're like he's suspending Sue. Oh. He goes, Sue, there is an orgy of evidence stacked against you.
Yes.
And he's so serious.
Figgins is like one of my favorite parts of this rewatch has been Figgins. He's so legit. I'm like, yes, you should have carried on like this and not been so like crazy in future, because yes, he really seemed like such a cool character. Like, all of he ended up being on Will's side. You know, his budget concerns were legit. They all make sense. And I really like Figgins. Like, he doesn't seem like an antagonist at the moment. He should have remained this good, because he was actually one of my favorite parts of it. Like, of the whole first 13.
Yeah, he was great when Sue and Will kind of shoving each other, whatever, and he goes, give it civil, hey, give it civil. And they just, oh man, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few of mine, another few is when, I love when the big fight's happening with Finn and Puck and all that, And then Rachel, then someone goes, I bet it was Rachel. And she goes, I didn't do anything. And Finn goes, yeah, it was Rachel. Rachel's like, oh, shit.
Pretty much.
Another weird part as well is, it's not even important, but like when Quinn's crying and saying Puck is the father, it always makes me sound like, it always sounds to me that she says Mike is the father. I've always thought, and I always thought about that, just like, oh, plot twist, all right, Mike's the father. And then Mike's like the most important character of like.
I also loved the bit where Emma was on the phone and she was like, Artie's ramming himself into a wall, and he was. And we had Rachel, who made this choice for Lea Michele? That when she gets stressed in competition rooms, she just goes and lies with her head against the wall, because she does it like, you see her doing it in the background of this scene, you see her do it in many other scenes, many other green room competition scenes. Look out for it. She'll be like, and like she'll just be against the wall, basically with her feet out and her head leaning on the wall, and her, not headbutting it, but just sort of falling into one single headbutt of the wall. And it's like, it's like a thing. I don't know if that's just Lea like making a choice or if that's like someone's idea, but it's a consistent thing and it just is hilarious to me. And I think there's a bit in the background of that scene as well where like Puck is just sitting there like flicking Kurt in the ear as well, and Kurt's just like, every time he's just like putting his hand up and catching it, and then a Puck will try it again and he'll put up his hand, and it's just like, I don't know, little things in the background of this first 13 just kill me. So yeah
that's why it was so great. All right, so the first 13 is all finished. So we'll just go around the circle about what we all thought about it. Any sort of like anything that after watching, you know, finishing 5 seasons of this show, what do we think after going back and completing the first 13? Because obviously they're a huge staple in the Glee fandom. Like, no matter what, everyone goes back to the first 13.
Except
I was going to say, Caitlin, what do you think? I'll start off with you.
God, there's just so much Will Schuster. I see so much in the Glee fandom being like, the first 13 or everything. I'm like, you remember how much Will Schuster is in these episodes? I do not buy it.
Yeah.
I cannot with the amount of Will Schuster. But the kids are great. I'm enjoying them more than I enjoy them as a team later on at this point. Yeah. But they're wonderful and Will is horrible.
Pretty much. Yeah, I really like, as I said, yeah, the kids, the dynamic, the kind of the mood of the show, like the absurd stuff works as an absurd thing as opposed to later on where they just try and throw things at you and make you accept it, if you know what I mean, yeah. because they do it differently, they do the cinematography differently, they do the musical cues differently, they play things as jokes properly, they do things like those, you know, funny camera angles, like, as opposed to just throwing ridiculous things at you in future and being like, oh, yeah, okay, that's normal. Like, if you know what I mean, like, that's just, you have to accept that. They don't frame it as absurd in the future. And I think that it probably, if they'd stuck to this format, it might have been a very different show. Like, if they'd stuck to the absurdism and the inner monologues and stuff as a consistent thing rather than just like, oh, yeah, we did that once. And now we're going to do something different. It may have been really different in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, my thoughts on the first 13, I mean, I've mentioned it a lot on the show, so I won't go too much into it, but I really, 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 really like the dynamic of the Glee Club and watching them succeed, as in, like, them starting off with no, I mean, obviously Rachel has a bit of experience, but most of them have no experience in performing in this way, and then seeing them improve and progress up to the point of sectionals, and then they're still choppy and rough, but they're, you know, it's meant to be like that. They're not meant to be this, you know, high class, you know, best
polished
dancers. Yeah, you know, it's not meant to be, and it's not, which is really great. So I just, yeah, they've, I've never ever, like, to be honest, this is probably like, I think probably the first 13 is probably my favorite part of any show ever, I'd have to say, to be honest.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, role. I mean, I do watch a lot of TV, but I always go back to this first 13. Yes, that's me.
Well,
right, do you want to take the reins, Natalie?
Yeah, I mean, my main question is what everyone's looking forward to. This is the second half of season one. You know, we haven't got our episodes locked down for that yet, but obviously the first one coming back, so 1:14, is Hello, which involves Jesse. And Caitlin's a big fan of Jesse, and I'm a big fan of Jesse, and I'm hoping that we get some good Jesse episodes in, because This I will actually throw back, because this episode actually included was it this one, or was it one of the two that we just watched? I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was the ballad. You know, had that bit with Schuster. Yeah, of course it was. With Schuster kind of telling Rachel at the end, like, they'll, you know, one day you'll, you know, find a guy who, you know, likes all of you, even the stuff that you don't like, that's the stuff he'll like the most. And for Rachel, I mean, she does have fantastic love with Finn. She really does, and I would never take away from that. And I think that he does accept everything about her and stuff like that. But I also saw a photo set on Tumblr recently of that quote being, you know, put against a bunch of Jesse scenes where he's just, like, loving on Rachel's crazy performance stuff. Like, there's one bit where he's just like, you were pulling focus. It was incredible. Like he was so, like Jesse is her match in a lot of ways. Like, in every way that Finn's not. And that's not to say that everyone has one perfect person forever and stuff like that. In every way that Finn is not, Jesse is her match. And I just love him. And I love him for himself as well. Like, I think that the small amounts of progression that you see from his reappearances in later series are, like, I could tell you a world about that character just from those. I think Jonathan Groff is such a good actor. And I think that he is someone who would be such a good addition to season six. As I've said multiple times, if she has to have another love interest, I think it should be Jesse, because he is perfect for her in so many ways. And I'm not saying that he'd be better for her than Finn, but I think that his love for her was really genuine. And I think that watching him again is going to be really fun, because it's going to, like, knowing a little bit about his progression. I think, you know, seeing how, because he's very childish and naive as well. He comes in looking very slick, but he's just a childish teenager as well. And I'm really excited to love Jesse again. Caitlin, anything to add to that?
No, that's pretty much it. I love Jesse. He's so ridiculous and fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
And I really think that, like, yeah, as I said, he's the number one thing I want from season six if they are following Rachel's story.
Well, I think they'd have to. I think because, like, last time we saw in season three, Jesse was coaching Broken Adrenaline. But then why is there a free spot open the next year? You know, what's Jesse doing? Why is Will Schuster, you know, going to potentially be the...
good point. Good point.
What's he doing?
And the way that he kind of reacts to Rachel when he sees her at the end of season three, like when he's coaching...
I love that.
Means so much to me. And I'm not, like, and I don't think that it takes away from her relationship with Finn. I just love him. And I don't think that him coming in now would be, like, a second best thing. I think it would be, like, a different person who also happens to be really good for you and care about you and has really grown. And I'm so excited for Jesse. So hopefully everyone likes Jesse, because we'll probably be focusing on some episodes with him.
Hopefully he puts it back on track on her life instead of... Sorry. Oh, God, I just get so angry when I think about how they did Rachel end of season five.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, it may be. He's such a good actor, and I think they know that. Like, I think everyone involved in Glee knows how good Jonathan Groff is, and I think that if they put a little bit of effort into it, they could really have him come in incredibly well-developed and be someone really good for Rachel, even as a friend. Like, I really think that he... You know how Adam Lambert was, like, such a weird highlight of last season as, like, a rational adult? I feel like Jesse could be season six as Adam Lambert. Not that he'll be, like, rational, because he'll always be a little bit ridiculous, but...
He wouldn't be Jesse if he wasn't ridiculous.
Yeah, but I love him, and I just... I remember being so excited for this when it was happening. And they really pushed it. They're like, we've got Jonathan Groff. Did the world really... I knew who Jonathan Groff was, but was he famous at that point?
It's probably just as famous as Lea Michele was.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose it was marketing towards Broadway fans and stuff, but he's so good. And yeah, I cannot say, like, if I met Jonathan Groff, there are very few people that I would, like, I've met a lot of people and I'm really excited to meet a lot of artists that mean a lot to me, but I usually kind of, I've done it so much in various formats that I kind of know how I feel about it. If I met Jonathan Groff, I'd be, like, so stupid. I would say the worst, most stupid things, and I'd just, like, grin stupidly and fall over, probably. Like, I love him so much. Not just from this, pretty much everything that he's done, and I just, yeah. Anyway, so Jesse is going to be a highlight. Any other highlights for the rest of the season?
I think that's it, really. I mean, it's going to be interesting rewatching, knowing that because they filmed the first 13 in a bubble, and the back nine are when they finally had like audience or like input from the public. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes rewatching it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got just how much they were reacting to fan interaction feedback, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously the Shelby stuff to come, but yeah, please feel free to tell us what you'd most be excited for the second half of season one, and we'll be getting to that in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, I mean, just to finish up, shall we throw back to what we were mentioning earlier about the news for the season six episodes, because we do have some issues there or some thoughts there. Has everyone seen the news about the casting for season six?
Yep.
Thoughts? Caitlin, how about you, first of all?
I mean, I thought it's completely logical because I am assuming we're having a time jump of a few years at this point. Okay. So, you know, the kids, the new directions, and mostly this news just made me sad for them because I feel like they were shafted before. They're being shafted again. But, like, it makes sense that they would need a new people if they're going to be focusing a lot at McKinley. And it seems like they're kind of, if everyone's going back to Ohio, then that's where all the stories are going to be taking place. Well, you need those characters. I doubt they're going to be hugely focused on, but they do need some of those characters to, like, be the new directions.
I mean,
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I've got the Hyper article up, and they're just saying that there's going to be five new kids coming to New Directions. So obviously that means we're going back to Ohio in some format. Do you want me to read them out, Nat?
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I've got some thoughts about like what they're doing as well, but yeah, go ahead with the characters. Yeah.
All right, so we've got four. The first one is Roderick. He's a chubby and shy. He's chubby and shy with a voice like Otis Redding. His looks don't match with his talent, described as a true goober. He's the show's new underdog. Then there's Spencer. He's the new resident football stud who just so happens to possess an incredible voice. Shocking. Oh, my God. He's also gay, but per the casting notice, he's post-Glee gay. No one messes with him about his sexuality because he'll kick their asses if they do. Jane is righteous, ambitious, and unconventionally pretty. Shocking. She's funny because she doesn't have much of a sense of humor. I find this part really interesting. She wanted to be a warbler, but tradition kept her from joining, so she jumped ship in New Directions, which I think is
so quite... She'll be even more of a female Blaine than Rachel is.
So is Dalton co-ed at this point?
No, I'm assuming that she wanted to go, like, she respected Glee Club and what they do, and that she wasn't allowed, obviously, because girls can't go to the school. So, yeah. I don't think Dalton's co-ed at this point. I mean, if they do, we'll be a bit like, okay. But, yeah.
And the last two are Mason and Madison. Do they sound like twins? Because they are. Male and female twin Cheerios. They're super positive and extremely weird. Whatever. Mason gives off a gay vibe, and then there's brackets. I think this is from the writer. Spoiler alert, he's not. Thoughts on all this is that, well, okay, first of all, I think that these are more underdogs than the new kids in season four and five ever were. But I also think that we're not even going to focus much on them. I mean, I know that there's, you know, all these new characters, but if we're going to be back in New Directions, like you said, Caitlin, we have to have a new class. But just because there's new students, I don't think we're going to be focusing on them completely. And I think it's fine. I mean, I'm fine with this. And especially if these descriptions are actually legit, which, I mean, there's no reason as to why they won't be. I'm happy. I'm fine knowing that the New Directions has this kind of underdog vibe. Like, kids are going back into the club to try and get a sense of acceptance again. I'm fine with that. What do you think, Nat?
First of all, the twins, like, is this more of like a High School Musical situation?
I was thinking
or like a Flowers in the Attic situation? Because, like, if they're a bit weird, like, let's not, shall we not? If you don't know what that's referencing, guess what? Don't look it up.
Up now, I have to.
Jack, I'm talking
about. Don't do it.
Don't look up Flowers in the Attic. Anyway, it's. So, yeah, I hope that's not their weirdness. I don't think Glee's ready for that. But no. My thoughts about this would be interesting. I mean, I don't want to just move away from the characters. If there is a time jump, you know, I'd sort of want to really want to close off the show with the characters that we have and their lives. But if the aim is sort of to get, you know, the Glee Club at McKinley back online, if you know what I mean, then I wouldn't mind even having these characters just for the, maybe the final couple of episodes, if you know what I mean. Like, literally just the last episode being kind of their intro to joining the club, like a fast forward of their intro, you know, and it's starting up again. I don't know if we need to start their journey with them, if you know what I mean. Like, we just need the very start of their journey, if that makes sense.
Well, we saw at the end of the last season Sam coming back, so if Sam is coaching the New Directions, we could just see them, like, peripherally while Sam is coaching them or something.
Is that what Sam's going to do?
It could, I mean, that's what they kind of set up at the end of the season.
Him going back to Ohio.
Yeah, and he was staring in the window that used to be the choir room. And
yeah, I suppose.
I'd be happy with him doing that on the account that it's his decision, because the main problem, which I mentioned on the show, was when Will was really, really forcing Finn's role onto Sam. And Sam was so Sam was so uncomfortable with it, but he did it anyway, and then he was, you know, crying in the end of it. I think that...
Yeah, that destroyed me.
Yeah, but I think that him coaching it now on his own decision is fine. Like, he's got no one there trying to force, you know, one of his friends, his friends who's passed away, roll onto him, you know. I think it's fine.
I'd be pretty happy with Sam, you know, as that person. I'm pretty happy with Sam as the male lead of season 6, if you know what I mean. Like, I really, I love him, and so I'd be pretty happy with that. I don't know how Rachel is going to tie into all of this, so that...
I've got thoughts for Rachel.
Huh?
I want Rachel. This is my thoughts for season 6. I want Rachel to
be a Glee Club teacher. No.
No, I want her to go to LA, and then that all messes up for her, and then she hits rock bottom, like complete rock bottom, because I want to see her face more adversity and like climb up from something rather than just getting everything she wants for no particular reason.
Yeah.
Like, I want her to be freaking homeless in New York.
She's not going to be homeless in New York.
I know, she's got two gay dads that'll fund everything, but I want it to happen.
What do you think the end game in terms of, like, Clayne would be? Like, do you think it'll just be, like, focusing on a freaking wedding? Or, like, do you think any of them will have,
get married.
Oh, please, no. Anyway,
they're going to get married, yeah.
What about their careers? What about their individual thoughts and stuff? Do they have individual thoughts anymore?
Blaine doesn't. He's not allowed to.
Because Blaine is so upset with Kurt, he's actually going to go on the adult website that he was on, and he's going to become one of those boys. So, fun.
Oh, my God.
Blaine's going to go teach the Warblers while Sam teaches the New Directions.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How about they all teach
surprise.
They don't have a faculty advisor in the Warblers. Imagine if they did, though. Imagine if they had Blaine at the Warblers, Sam at New Directions, and Schuster still at... Like, if he did take the job at Carmel and he was, like, hardcore, like, sunglasses, like, competitive show choir, and, like, the power got to his head. And the whole thing is that they band together to take down Schuster.
Oh, please. That would be the greatest. I want that right now.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the kids is coaching the Warblers, because I remember reading on some article a while ago being, like... saying we'll be surprised to see who the new coaches were of the other teams. Okay.
What about, so what, Blaine would, like, I mean, yes, it's all boys' school, but, like, Blaine has to be the one to kick this girl out of the Warblers?
I don't know, but last time we saw Blaine, he was with June Dolloway.
What's Blaine's career goal? What's Kurt's career goal, excuse me? Like, is Kurt actually going to have some sort of fulfillment? Like, this character is really important to the show. Is his fulfillment going to be getting married? Because, no.
You can go back to Vogue.com, please.
Pardon?
He needs to go back to Vogue.com,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, he needs something. He needs something, because, seriously, he's not going to be a performer. Like, sorry, but he's
storyline was perfect for him.
It was so good, and I don't understand why they were like, oh yeah, I'm throwing this away to go to Nyada.
Because that made me so angry.
He's very talented, but unless he makes a name for himself as, you know, based on his eccentricity, he's not going to climb the ranks as a normal performer. He's not. Like, so I don't understand, what they're going to do with him. And if their solution is Kurt has a happy ending because he got married, I'm going to not be very happy about that.
And that's even just lazy writing, you know. Yeah.
It's like they're not thinking enough about the character to think what he is outside of that stupid relationship that literally no one has liked for the past 3 years. Like, I mean, people liked it at first, but, like, now people's just like, wow, all they do is fight. Like, literally all they do is fight and compete with each other, and that's it. Anyway, so, yeah. We've got a lot to get to before we get to season 6, though. We've got...
Yeah, like, January, isn't it, when it comes back?
Oh, something like that. Yeah, so we're going to keep powering through and hopefully get some good memories and sad memories, I suppose, and all sorts of things. Yeah, until then. But hopefully you've liked the Glee Chat flashback so far. We're pretty pleased with how it's going, and this has been fun. Hopefully no one gets tired of us recapping the episodes. But, yeah, please let us know what episodes you'd like covered in the future, and we'll consider those and just, you know, pointing out the most important moments for the future, because yeah, it's been good. I think that we've done some pretty good episodes so far.
Yeah, well, very fun.
Thank you, everyone. I suppose we shall say bye now and go. But yeah, until next time. I guess this has been Glee Chat flashbacks. So bye bye, Caitlin. Bye bye, Jack.
See ya. Bye.